Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Happy Monday.
Have no place to go.
That's right, I'm talking to you.
Have no place to go. Darling, have no place to go. Have no place to go.
And as always, we don't know the lyrics. We believe it's goodbye, baby. Could I have some corn? I don't know what it comes after goodbye, baby.
Maybe yes, I'm gone.
Oh, yes, I'm gone?
Yes, I'm gone.
Oh. 6:12 in the morning, and Mark Carmen is here for Dave Ennett all week. All week, yes?
All week. Good morning, Steve.
All right, good. You have a second job for some fly-by-night website. What is that called?
That is fansided.com.
Well, that's not a fly-by-night website. That's a terrific organization.
I believe they're the now number seven, Steve, in the web traffic world. Good old fansided.com.
Yeah, they do a nice job. Why did you say they were fly-by-night?
I don't believe I said that. I think that came out of your mouth, Steve.
Well, that's not true at all.
But thank you for giving Fansided some love.
Fansided.com.
Fansided.com, yes, sir.
So usually what happens is after the show, we like to get together and have a discussion about things that went right, things that went wrong. And Carmen is wheels up about 10:01 to run out to his other job.
Yes.
I like to leave like 9:50.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Ryan Burrow will join us from Charlottesville as part of his ABC News duties and duties for WGN News here in just a few minutes after the horror show on Saturday, which ought to be what we're talking about most, but instead we find ourselves once again talking about a failed president who responded incorrectly. We'll get into all of that coming up. Dr. Most, later on, the topic is colon cancer on a Monday, a happy talk topic.
That needs to be had, for sure.
Without a doubt. And whenever anybody that's famous ends up getting sick, it's always a chance to focus on it and try to get you to do the right thing by way of your own health. By the way, swap text with Eddie Olchek, and he's very positive, very upbeat.
He's the best. You told him we love him?
Oh, absolutely.
And he's adorable. Yeah.
I don't know that I told Eddie he was adorable. I think
okay.
He knows.
Okay.
I texted with him. I told him he was adorable and that I'd bring him banana cream pie because he loves banana cream pie.
I did not know that.
Yeah, isn't that some weird story?
He's a big pie guy. Apparently, I was texting somebody that I'm gonna who I was dating at the time. I'm gonna bring you over the pie. And I texted Edzo, but Edzo does love pies. Like, you're bringing the banana cream pie to my house right now, Carm.
But there was like sexual innuendo with the banana cream pie.
Somehow I feel we're missing a piece of that story.
Yeah, totally.
That I was texting a girl I'm dating that I'm no longer dating, but instead I texted Eddie O.
And you're bringing her.
And I offer her banana cream pie, which is obviously code for something.
There might be a couple details left out, but what I said is true. I sent a text, banana cream pie, Edzo got it, and he's like, Carm, getting weirder, buddy.
And it's a coincidence he likes pie, too.
That's fantastic.
This is all weird.
I just Googled, I'm bringing a banana cream pie. You do not want to see this.
No, the Urban Dictionary, I'm sure, has something ugly.
Yeah.
Right.
Paul Conrad later, Ryan Nobles later from CNN, and Governor Rauner scheduled to appear at 7:20. The Senate overrode his veto yesterday. Will the House do the same on Senate Bill 1 in school funding? At 6:15, before we get to traffic, let's do the top six.
Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel. It's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
Three dead in total. Two of those police in helicopter crash. Not directly related to the violence on the ground, but a mission that seems to have been a hurry-up 911 triage sort of mission by these cops in a helicopter that went down. The one death that you can directly relate to, the neo-Nazi white supremacist cowards, is a young woman, age 32, Heather Heyer, who, according to her family and friends, just spent her time when she wasn't working for those who needed extra help. And her last Facebook post said, and I'm only slightly paraphrasing here, if you're not outraged by this, you're not paying attention, speaking to the fact that there was an assemblage of Klan and white supremacists in Charlottesville that was supposed to be all about the removal of the Robert E. Lee statue from its place to a museum, and the denouncement of this incredibly outdated, historically accurate notion of how wrong it was then of slavery being okay and Robert E. Lee fighting for it and all of that. None of it became about the statue. Everything became about violence, and a 32-year-old is gone, dead because of it. So,
very poetic interview, too, on one of the news programs yesterday, too. I'm sure you saw with the many of the people, but this one specific woman had marched for civil rights, and she said, I never in my wildest dreams dreamt, you know, as I'm watching my grandchildren and great-grandchildren grow up, that I would be seeing Nazi swastikas and the Klan again being any of issue.
Well, think about Skokie in the 70s, right?
Right.
The right to march is not the question here. The right to assemble is not the question here. That's protected, and that was never in doubt. That was going on, and that was fine. What's not okay is killing someone with your car, mm-hmm. like a member of ISIS. It was intentional, and that individual will be in court today. Next, Steve Bannon may have been his final week of work at the White House, part of that being this white supremacist story. He was called out by none other than the Mooch this weekend. The Mooch now out doing interviews. He's on the morning talk shows and the network TV morning talk shows this morning. He was on ABC with Stephanopoulos yesterday. He'll be on Colbert tonight. The Mooch is out, and the Mooch wants Bannon's head on a platter. The Illinois Senate, as I said, overrode Rauner's veto of school funding. What happens now? We'll take that up specifically with the governor at 7:20. And by the way, again, regardless of where the conversation goes, I salute the governor for coming on. Mike Madigan not appearing on the program today. He could surprise us, I suppose. But here on show 966, he's Ofer, as in O for 966. Is he coming on today? Oh, he's not coming.
No.
All right. Mike Madigan game, playing it early. Seventh caller now a winner. Mike Madigan's not on. Somebody should win. You win if you're the seventh caller now. Mike Madigan against to duck me and duck the show. Next, there's a new Amtrak train called the Eclipse that will go from Chicago to Carbondale specifically. Took less than a day to sell out the special train service for the solar eclipse. Amtrak announced the Eclipse just a week ago, and this is the first U.S. solar eclipse since 1979, and will last, and I didn't realize this, 2.5 hours. In total.
The eclipse?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah.
You mean 2 minutes and 40 seconds?
Yeah.
No, this, no, 2.5 hours. No, it's 2 minutes and 40 seconds. I read it wrong. 2 minutes and 40 seconds.
But that's one of the,
longest, but that is, well, Steve, let's go to Steve. He's in outer space.
Yep.
There's Steve live from outer space.
He's
live from outer space. Good morning, everyone.
But 2 minutes and 40 seconds is one of the longest time durations for an eclipse that we're aware of, isn't it?
It'll be the longest that it'll be the totality in the United States. That's why everybody's going to Carbondale. Actually, it's just a little south of Carbondale, Macanda, 2 minutes and 40 seconds.
Okay.
7 days, 6 hours, 59 minutes, 48 seconds until the eclipse, by the way.
I'm going.
There's a countdown clock?
There is. SIU has one on the front page.
Isn't it funny now? Everybody's going to this.
Yeah.
Everybody?
I'm sorry. Yes, that's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah. But we will have everybody there.
A girl I knew from college was sending me pictures of the last time there was the eclipse. We were all in college, and apparently we were interested in it, and it's very funny.
The eclipse was not scheduled until Trump won. It's a signal from above.
Live from outer space, I'm Steve Krasanich.
Thank you. No Powerball winner. Jackpot now $430 million as of now by Wednesday. A $393 million Mega Millions winner bought their ticket in Palos Heights. If you're that person, you want to come on, feel free.
Absolutely. And I interviewed him, too, on Saturday. Nick, not the guy who won, but the Nick's Barbecue, where they sold the winning ticket.
What, is it just like a restaurant?
It's a restaurant. Yeah, it's Nick's Barbecue, big on the south side. There's five different restaurants, but this one is in Palos Heights off 127th in Harlem. He was so cute, this man. He gets $500,000 because his store sold the winning ticket. Shows up for work in his little uniform, 9 o'clock, starts talking to all the media. We said, what are you going to do now? He said, I'm going to give back to the community, give money to the church, and then I'm going to take my wife on a cruise, on a vacation for our 40th anniversary next year.
How sweet is that?
Could not have been
more
humble.
We like that a lot.
Yeah, wonderful guy.
And finally this, the season's final major was wrapped up yesterday, and the winner was Justin Thomas. Who? Justin Thomas, who has now won 4 events this year, and nobody knows his name. Well, you'll know it now. He was one of the best young players in the game. And put some distance between he and the field as the afternoon wore on yesterday and won. He is part of a young cabal, Mark Carmen, a cabal of young superstars.
Buddies with Jordan Spieth coming up. He's been jealous of Jordan for a long time. Now he's got one for himself. So congrats to Justin.
You mean jealous as in pal jealous, not jealous as in I don't like Jordan Spieth.
Right, I want to be winning.
Do you know the eclipse is going to be 2.5 hours? Did you hear?
Do you know that I'm trying to go with Steve Grzanich and stay in his tent, but he won't let me?
The American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling folks, the 60-Minute Men, bring you the top 6 at 6.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
The people united will never be defeated.
Let's call it for what it is. They were white supremacists. Yes. They were Nazis. Yes.
Call their names.
They don't stand for us. They get out of bed every day to hate people and divide our country.
Pretty clear that the driver was intent on hitting 100, 200, 300 people.
Heather was right in front of me. She was in front of my fiance. And when the car hit, it hit her head on. So it just took on down the street.
Ryan Burrow is in Charlottesville, Virginia this morning for ABC News and also for us here. Where is he? Okay. And find him here technically on all the switches and buttons that I'm asked to operate, which is a different bad idea. And good morning, Ryan.
Good morning. How are you guys this morning?
We are fine, thank you. And how are the people of Charlottesville? What is the mood there?
You know, it's a somber mood. They had a vigil last night for Heather Heyer, the 32-year-old who was killed. The mother saying that her daughter was all about defending her beliefs. The vigil had hundreds of people gathered with candles and flowers and signs. They were in that exact same location where the car plowed in to that group of people. So kind of an eerie scene just about 36 hours after the fact. The questions that remain today, did police do enough to prevent that situation from happening? In Charlottesville, there are a lot of tight roads here. There have been a lot of big events, and at times they've shut down a lot of these side roads. That was not the case yesterday. And following that kind of bizarre tiki torch demonstration Friday, people and saw the skirmishes after that. People say, well, why didn't they just shut everything down Saturday and tell everyone to go home instead of allowing it to escalate to the point it did?
Well, the right to, as we mentioned a moment ago, the right to assemble and the right to protest is constitutionally guaranteed. The violence that took place there and after is not. So why did the march organizer stay in town? Didn't he try to have a press conference or something yesterday?
Well, yesterday, yeah, it was an absolute disaster. This Jason Kessler, he's the head of that Unite the Right. He held a press conference in front of City Hall. It was a very strange setup. Kind of the media circled around him. I was part of that. The protesters and demonstrators shouting him down directly behind us over our shoulders. And then the state police behind them. So it wasn't hard for the protesters to eventually break through us in the media, disrupt the press conference, eventually end up shoving Kessler, who managed to flee behind some state troopers before getting protection. From essentially riot officers who were there pushing back the crowd. So it was a little bit of a chaotic scene yesterday, but he's the only representation of these white supremacist neo-Nazi groups that we've seen really since everything went down on Saturday.
And the crowd dispersed only after Virginia's Governor Terry McAuliffe declared a state of emergency. And Ryan, what else do we know about the man charged, James Alex Fields? I know there's a lot of propaganda, Nazi propaganda on his Facebook and on the web. He's going to be in court today, yes?
Yeah, he's going to have a teleconference. He's going to appear via video link before a judge in his bail hearing. He's charged with second-degree murder, among some other charges. 20 years old, from Ohio, attended U.S. Army basic training, but actually failed to meet training standards just a few months in, so never actually technically served, just attended the U.S. Army. His mother says that she knew he was going to a rally. She thought it had something to do with Trump, but didn't really know much about his politics. She said she was actually watching his cat during that period. And an ex-teacher you brought up Upfield says that he thought Nazis were pretty cool guys and was an open admirer of Hitler. So a little bit of that kind of information leaking out. We'll see what his discussions have been with police and if any of that information comes out during his bail hearing today.
Heather Heyer, what do we know about her?
Well, 32 years old, from Charlottesville, and that's a big reason a lot of people here feel really disappointed, not only that there was a death, but you had a lot of people come into Charlottesville who are not from this area, and one woman says she feels like that her community has been raped. It's been assaulted. She actually used those words, saying someone came in here and did this to her community. They're absolutely heartbroken. Her mother says that her daughter was all about defending her beliefs, and the governor said that she died standing up against hate and bigotry. So she'll be remembered, 32 years old. You know, we'll go down as the fatality that occurred during the demonstrations. Remember, too, we also had two state troopers that died when a helicopter crashed about 7 miles away. So there were three people that died in all of this.
And the investigation into that crash is ongoing. Is there any news out of that?
Not right now. Anything new? I mean, obviously, it was a vehicle that plowed into a group of people. It has also hit two vehicles in that process. Video evidence is obviously being scanned over by anyone who submitted it. You know, it was a disturbing scene when I pulled up on Saturday. We knew exactly where that location was, and people were kind of milling around. It was very quiet. One of the shoes from apparently one of the victims was left behind, and someone had placed it actually on a garbage can and eventually at the memorial, just showing some of the – there were hats left behind and sunglasses as well. So there was a lot of chaos on Saturday.
The coward tried to get away after he committed murder, and I don't know that I've heard the story of how he was caught. Did the crowd contain him, or were there cops there right away?
You know, there were a lot of police in the area. Yeah, I don't have the specifics on that either. It wasn't too long after the fact, so it doesn't sound as though there was any kind of police chase. This was kind of a downhill sloping road. So where you see that crash happen, when he backed up, he was going uphill back into another crowded area. So it's possible there was a squad car in the area that may have blocked him in, or maybe there were just a lot of people there that were able to get him to stop one way or another.
Anybody there talking about the president's lack of specific condemnation of Nazis and white supremacists?
Yeah, the governor. The governor's come out strongly. You have to understand Terry McAuliffe obviously doesn't see eye to eye, too, politically with this president, but is calling on the president and all lawmakers to call for what it is, these demonstrations, white supremacists, neo-Nazis, and wanting the White House to call out these specific groups rather than just making kind of references to bigotry and references to violence and things like that. A White House spokesman did come out yesterday and says that Trump does condemn white supremacists, KKK, neo-Nazis, and all extremist groups. But once again, this coming from a spokesman, not you know, from the words of President Trump, which has irked a lot of people.
Great information, as always. And thank you for being there. And if anything happens, you know where to find us.
All right. You know where to find me. Take care, guys.
Thank you. That's Ryan Burrow, the newsman.
Yeah.
There's another name I call him around here, but it's not appropriate to this conversation. He just lives for the news.
Yes,
and does such a great job covering it.
Yeah, he does.
Right, I call him the news ferret.
Okay.
I don't know why, but he's like a little ferret. He's like into everything, but if there's news, he's on it.
Well, you call him the little hamster, so you got an affection for little critters.
Clearly, I'm the problem.
Yeah.
Dr. Kevin Most coming up here in just a few moments. Governor Rauner at 7:20. Stand by for both. Let's do the big story next on 720 WGN.
I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine.
I've got
making people better by making slow, medicine better. Dr. Kevin Most joins us now. Well, I hope you had a nice weekend.
I did. How about, you know, perfect weather. How could you not?
Yeah, it was beautiful. And summer, I'm told, can't last forever, so, you know, make the most of it, kids. That's my really important advice to you this morning. You know, sometimes you have to think for the others. You know what I'm saying,
yeah.
Doc?
Yeah.
You know, so I say, hey, slow down out there. Drive carefully. Thanks,
so
Einstein.
Did you play golf or did you watch golf? Or
yeah,
did
no,
you
I
both?
Did both. Yeah, I did both.
Good for you.
I only got 9 holes in each day, so I know that's a big problem for the listeners who worry about me. But, yeah, I had a lot going on. And yourself?
I did the same.
Yeah,
played early Saturday and then played 9 yesterday and then watched that unbelievable PGA. I thought it was great.
Justin Thomas, 24-year, I believe he's 24, 24 years old, good family story, third-generation PGA professional. His dad and his grandfather were club pros, and he's one of the best young guns in the game, and nobody knows him. Well, they know him now. Four wins this year.
And you can just see how popular he was as a player.
Seems like a nice kid.
Well, no, that look at the end of the round.
Yeah.
You've got Ricky Fowler and Jordan Spieth, two of probably the best players in the world, sitting up there in street clothes watching him finish.
Yeah. Yeah, Jordan Spieth looked like he should be thrown out, looked like security should get him. He had a T-shirt on, his hat on backwards. Yeah, like, who's that?
Yeah.
All right, so I mentioned earlier I swapped texts with Eddie O this weekend, and typical of Eddie O, he's asking about me. And Eddie Olczyk, for those that don't know, is dealing with colon cancer. It was announced by the Blackhawks about a week ago. And because of that, we take this opportunity, as we do whenever there's a celebrity who gets an unfortunate illness like this, to talk about it to make sure you're fully educated. So first off, I mean, I know you haven't talked to Eddie, Doc, but talk about colon cancer.
Yeah, and Steve, two things. One, what you just said, you know, good that you check in with them. Sometimes people find out someone has a disease and they shy away when, in fact, this is a time when they actually need support, saying, hey, we're there thinking of you. You know, we're here fighting with you. So great for him.
Yeah, but that's a good point, because you don't have to. People go, well, I don't know what to say. You don't have to say anything other than I was thinking about you.
Yep.
You know, you don't have to say, hey, if you need anything, call me. You don't have to say, I'm going to come by and bring a day. You could do any of that, but don't feel, or don't overthink the message. Just tell somebody you're thinking about them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But for Eddie, it's interesting. You know, we talked about this. I looked back. January of 2016, we talked about colon cancer in those under the age of 50 for a couple of reasons. One, my cousin had passed away at the age of 51 from colon cancer, and the wine diva, who was certainly under the age of 50, had passed away. And we talked about that because a study came out that showed this increased incidence of colon cancer of people under the age of 50. And I'll tell you, it kind of gives me goosebumps sometimes when we talk about things like this, because Eddie comes out and tells us, you know, what's going on with him, and the next day a study comes out in JAMA that shows this increase in incidence of young colon cancer cases is actually seen in white females and males, not African American, not blacks, no, not Hispanics, but really is limited to that to the Caucasian race. So a lot more questions than answers, but it's fascinating, and it's, like I said, it's eerie when we talk about something and then a study comes out the next day.
Yeah, and I want women to hear that message as well. This is not just younger white men. This is younger white women as well. Now, we don't know specifically why.
No, and that's the interesting thing is I sit there and say, okay, here's the risk factors for colon cancer. Obesity, smoking, eating processed meat, lack of exercise. Well, hold on, that goes across all races.
Yeah.
And what we're finding is that actually in blacks, we're seeing this incident decrease, and whites, it's increasing. Now, that being said, we have to be really careful because statistics are statistics. There's still a higher incidence of colon cancer in blacks. So don't get the message that, oh, everything's great here. But we're at least seeing improvement there, where in the white, younger cases, we're seeing it's not going the right direction.
I know it's the breakfast time for people, and I don't want to get too graphic here, but I also want to keep this as simple as possible. If I think of my colon as an exit route, I want to keep that road as clean as possible. So I want a lot of fiber. I want to make sure it's kept healthy. I'm never going to be able to put up a sign there that says Dr. Most is responsible for the next half mile or whatever those highway sponsorship ads are. But the fact is we want to make sure that our plumbing is working appropriately, right?
Absolutely. You know, that's why we say this is a disease of industrialized countries, because often you'll see our diets are not high in fiber. We're eating processed meats. We're doing all these things that have chemicals in them that are exposing our colon to chemicals. And, you know, our intestines are very important, obviously. We take in nutrients and we save the stuff we need and we get rid of the stuff we don't need. And having a diet high in fiber with fruits and vegetables is one thing that's going to aid that.
We'll come back and get into more of this. We'll get Mark Harmon, who's in for Dave Ennett, involved. We'll get Andre involved as well. And during the break, Doc, because I take everything you say seriously, I am going to give Mark his first colonoscopy.
I've had one.
I'm leaving the room.
Okay,
for that.
His second colonoscopy. So, I want to make sure that we. Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. We continue with this discussion of colon cancer, 150,000 new cases a year, second leading cause of cancer-related deaths. Mark Carman lost his mom. I lost my dad, both to colon cancer. You mentioned the Wine Diva. There's nobody that is listening that hasn't been touched by it in some form. And the worst-case scenarios are when it's late in diagnosis, I suppose, Doc, and it metastasizes to the body's vital organs.
Yep, exactly. And that's the beauty of colon screening, because the stage of when you capture it or when you notice it is so important. Stage one colon cancer, colonoscopy is going to be the curative treatment in 99% of the cases where they can snare and remove that polyp and it's gone from your body. Stage two, it's gone through the wall a little bit. Some of those need surgery, but some of them are also being able to be treated with colonoscopy. And then stage three and stage four. I would imagine Eddie is probably stage three because they've already told us that he's had surgery and is going to have some chemotherapy. So
that's my question, Doc. If it is stage three or four, the aggressive treatment can probably best be tolerated by the younger patients. But what about if you're a little bit older and are diagnosed with three or four? What would that effect have on the body?
Yeah, that's very important. 85% of colon cancers are captured after the age of 50. But the ones that we're talking about, so the Eddie Olchek's, my niece, the Wine Diva, those individuals where it's found not by screening, it's found because often they have other symptoms. And when they have other symptoms, it's actually often has moved outside of the colon. Now, those individuals are usually healthier and stronger, so they can fight it a lot better. They can tolerate the toxic chemotherapy we give. They can bounce back from surgery much sooner. So the big message there is those at the age of 50 and over, get those colonoscopies because you don't want it to get to that advanced stage. Unfortunately, those under the age of 50, it's often found not by colonoscopy, but by other symptoms.
Mark Carman, say hi to Doc.
Hi, Doc. How often do we need to get these colonoscopies? I've got a pretty paranoid doctor, and so I wonder if he's telling me to go too much, but I have it in my family, Doc. So how, I've gotten one. I'm 44. Do I need to go once?
Well, when
a year?
Did you have the one you've had?
Probably within the last 2 years, I want to say. I mean, how often do I need to go here, Doc?
Yeah. So Mark, you fall into a kind of a unique group because you have a family history for it. So people that have a family history, physicians are often going to be saying, forget about 50 as the cutoff now, guys. We're moving that down to 40. Now, if you have a normal exam at 40 and you have a family history, some docs are going to give you a 5-year pass. Some might even give you a 7 to 10 year pass, but that five year plan is usually about it. Now, if you have a polyp that they found at any time, I'll give you a perfect example. For me, someone dumb enough to put this off till I was 55, had that done. I need to have my next colonoscopy in 3 years. So the time frames are really very based on what they find and actually how your doctor feels. The beauty of it is colonoscopy is a simple test. I know people don't like it, but it's pretty simple. And if it can save a life or save you from having chemotherapy, boy, sign me up.
I've had two colonoscopies. Unfortunately, both were clear. And I'll just echo what Doc just said. This is not just a doctor telling you to do the right thing for you. The test is nothing. It's nothing.
Yeah, I like it.
The prep is miserable. But the test, it's funny you say that, and I know you're only half kidding, because honestly,
I feel great
for a couple days because your system has never been cleaner.
Right. And you're terrified going into it. It's like, oh, that's it. You just lay down, and then all of a sudden you're asleep and you're done. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not awake.
No, that's the thing. When I finished the first one, I said, well, when do we start? And I go, well, about 2 hours ago. You're done.
You're done.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. The medications that they give us now, it's not uncomfortable because we're going to give you some pain medication during the procedure. And then we also give you a medication called Versed. You don't remember the procedure. You don't remember anything about it. The one thing I would say is you have to be really careful when you're on Versed because you can say things and not remember what you said.
I can't imagine the stuff I've said. I just hope there was no tape rolling. But again, the preparation portion, the day ahead of time, I talked to somebody the other day who tried to do this at work. No.
Yeah.
No. Just understand, when you prepare for this test, you're going to be at home, and you're going to be at home for an extended period of time during the day. The other thing, Doc, I would say, if anybody's listening that's going to go through this, and I'm sure there are a bunch of people listening this morning who are on the verge of doing this, you got to stay hydrated. I remember getting just one of the worst headaches of my life because you're dumping your body fluids regularly for hours. So what do you recommend there?
No, totally agree. And two things, you know, people used to say, oh my gosh, they have to drink these huge bottles of stuff for the prep. The new preps are much easier and much more tolerable, so you don't have to worry about that. But you hit on a very key point. You know, during the prep, what we're trying to do is clean the bowel. And the reason we want that is we want the gastroenterologist who has his scope to be able to see everything clearly and not miss even small lesions. So during that time, while we're clearing our bowel, we're going to lose fluid. So keeping up with fluids on top of it, even though I don't want to do that, I'm going to go to the bathroom again. You know what? You want to do that because the body will still absorb the fluids. It's trying to get rid of the solid.
Yeah. And by the way, the last thing you want is to go through 2/3 of the prep and then give up on the final third, go in for the procedure and have a doctor send you home because you can't do it.
Correct.
Yeah, that's not
correct.
Good. You don't want that.
Or to have a suboptimal study, you know, and you're not going to get the answers that you need or the reassurance that everything is fine.
You don't want anything suboptimal.
Nope.
All right, Doc, before I let you go, 2 quick things. One, there's good news here, and the good news consists of anecdotal stories all over, and a lot of you probably have those as well. But I told you last fall that a 50-year-old cousin who is just rock-solid healthy ended up with stage 4 colon cancer. He has now put on 35 pounds. The doctors are calling him a walking, talking miracle. He's active, and they are optimistic that he could end up on the other side of this, where they were telling family members last fall that it's a matter of time. Wow. So those stories are possible. But the mistake he made, and he would be the first to admit it, is when he had digestive issues for literally 2 months last summer that got progressively worse and worse, he didn't want to go to the doctor. He just wanted it to be better. He didn't want to go to the doctor. The worst thing to guarantee you're going to have problems with cancer of any kind is to not listen to those signals from your body, right?
Absolutely. You know, listen to the signals from your body and follow the screening. And believe me, I just laid it out there. I was a complete idiot. I see gastroenterologists every single day.
Right.
I talk to them every single day. And yet I put off my colonoscopy for 5 years and I had a precancerous lesion found. I mean, and I think I'm somewhat educated, but how stupid was I?
Yeah, and this is the doctor. And we know doctors are the worst possible patients, but this is the doctor telling you he should have done it differently. Who's the
worst? Radio host.
Yes. So, touche.
Well, Doc, we're out of time. It's Dr. Kevin Most with important information and ask your doctor today if you are in the hereditary group or approaching the age of 50 if you're not. This is nothing to mess around with. And you know what? Do it for Eddie. He'd want you to take care of yourself.
I was just going to say, do it for Eddie. You're getting close to 50. Think about it. I mean, talk to the doc and say, hey, I'm turning 50. Bring it up. I'm 49. When can I have my colonoscopy? Versus them saying, because a lot of people don't go to the doctor when they're 50. They don't go unless they're sick.
Yep.
So look for it.
Dr. Kevin Most, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. Thank you, Doc.
You got it. Take care, man. Talk to you later.
And Governor Bruce Rauner will join us in about 20 minutes. The news is next in 720 WGN. All right, we did our final majors picks last week because Mary Vanderbilt insisted on it. She loves the golf talk. So let's go live to Mike Jacobson. Sandberg's off for a couple days, getting retraining and being direct and judgmental. Mike, you have the scores that she accumulated. You've tabulated the results. Let's go worst to first. Who was last?
Oh, that would be me.
Okay, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a huge accomplishment.
Yeah, I feel good about
my
it.
Radio career.
Way to own it.
And then eighth place was Dave.
Oh, look at Eddie.
So the two quote-unquote sports guys are
nicely done, but you know what, though?
Eddie just continues his fall from grace. Poor guy.
He was never actually at grace.
True.
Next.
Seventh is Mary Sandberg Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet, currently in Wisconsin.
She married with and sleeps with Pat Boyle, the guy from Comcast Sportsnet.
Ugh. Another fall from grace. So sad.
Sixth place, Mrs. Golf, Mary Vanderbilt.
Yes. Oh, good job, Mary.
Fifth place, sixth
for Mary in golf is like a win.
It is. I beat Mary. I beat Dave. She's doing well.
Yeah.
And Mr. Golf, Steve Krasanich, coming in fifth place.
Not bad, right?
What?
Yes, Steve.
Look at that.
Now, golf is the little white ball, right?
I don't know why it's got to be about what color the ball is. Yeah.
All right. Here we go.
Fourth place, our favorite mom on the show, Ann Cochran.
Oh, yeah. Look at Ann.
Ann Summers. Ann Summers.
Ann Summers, right. That's right. Yeah. And third place is my better half, Audrey Wayne.
Wow.
Oh, Audrey.
And second place.
Oh, here we go with the two left.
Here we go.
Andrea Darlis.
Oh, I took second.
And in first place for the second time.
Oh, thank you very much.
In this Majors Madness that
we started.
I'd like
to thank all the little people who hit three wood off the tee.
Steve Cochran.
Two in a row.
Did anybody pick Justin Thomas or whatever his name is?
Nobody picked Justin Thomas, but Steve had Hideki did pretty good. Ricky Fowler didn't do terrible. Kuchar was up there.
Yeah, so. They all finished top ten.
I thought
nobody had the winner.
I thought Cochran had picked Justin, and he's like, no.
I did after he won.
Well,
I called,
tried
to get it in yesterday.
For some reason, I thought you did.
717. I don't want to belabor the point that I won.
I just want to say I was going to use the prize money for like important stuff, and it just seems that you're getting it.
There is no prize.
I'm donating it to the sun.
It's pride.
The sun's going to need to rebuild after the eclipse. The sun has to get some therapy. It's all an emotional thing. We'll come back at 7:17. We'll come back after Mary does traffic here, and we're planning on Governor Rauner joining us, and I think he's planning on that too in a moment. 7:21, the Steve Cochran Show continues live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. Governor Bruce Rauner joins us now. Governor, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
And thank you again for joining us. We appreciate the fact that you man up and show up as opposed to the Speaker of the House, my words, not yours, who continues to hide from the people of Illinois. You continue to give him the power that he doesn't deserve at this point. Again, my words. All right, now that I got that off my chest, Governor, let's talk about SB1. The Senate overrode your veto yesterday. We don't know when the House is going to take this up. What are you hearing about that?
Well, we understand the House is going to be in session on Wednesday, and I hope they have a good full discussion about my amendatory veto of SB1, why my changes are more fair and more equitable for all the children across the state. And I hope they decide to pass a bill that reflects many of the changes that I recommended. For your listeners to understand what's going on, I think it would be helpful for them to know they could come to illinois.gov/gov. So illinois.gov/gov, and they can look at the results of my amendatory veto. What's been going on in Illinois, and the special interest groups inside education don't want it to be known, is that the state taxpayers, especially the suburban taxpayers and downstate taxpayers, have been subsidizing Chicago Public Schools' broken system for decades to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. We're trying to change that, expose that, that it's been going on. And we want to help Chicago Public Schools. I want to help them tremendously. But we need to do it in a way that also is fair to children in the suburbs and downstate and to taxpayers around the state as well. So that's the results of the amendatory veto I did.
And I've heard some complaints over the weekend that possibly the amendatory veto was too broad. Do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, no, I think that's just an excuse. That's sort of a diversion. The amendatory veto, we've checked with all the lawyers. It's totally constitutional, totally appropriate. Basically, what I did was look at the bill that passed in the spring. Speaker Madigan knows it was a bad bill. He forced it through. It was not bipartisan. Only Democrats from the Chicago area primarily voted for it. And then they sat on it for 2 months. They did not want me to fix it. They did not want a negotiation or discussion. They just sat on it for 2 months to try to create a crisis so they could threaten the schools not to open. So only SB1 was an option. They finally sent it to my desk. I fixed it. I sent it back within a few hours. And they've just now, the Senate, at Madigan's direction, voted to override my veto. We need your listeners to understand what's really going on here. There's a huge diversion of money from the suburbs and downstate to Chicago in the bill, and you can see the results of it when they look at the numbers. And again, they're at illinois.gov/gov. You can see the truth to what's going on.
There's state aid payments that were supposed to go out on August 10th. These are the twice-a-month payments, I assume,
yep.
And there is a Democratic provision that was placed in the bill that holds those payments until there is, I think the term was, verifiable math on what the school funding situation would look like. So once again, teachers and students and parents are left in the lurcher. And while we think schools are going to open on time, the stress we put on families in this state is absolutely ridiculous.
No, that's exactly right. Unfortunately, Speaker Madigan and his majority, they've been doing this to Illinois for decades. They did it to us in the budget battle and the tax hike. Madigan held up. He wouldn't pass any budget for 2 years because he wanted to force a tax hike with no reforms whatsoever. He finally broke, he even broke off a few Republicans to just, they gave in, they surrendered and said, okay, we'll vote for a tax hike with no reforms. And he did that by holding up funding for schools, for universities, community colleges, social services. And he's doing it to us again right now on our schools. He's saying SB1 is the only option, even though it bails out Chicago, and you can see it in the numbers. The proof is in the numbers that got generated by the State Board of Education. Even though it's a massive bailout, it's the only option we'll consider, and it has to become the law.
You mentioned not passing a budget within 2 years, and this goes to the larger premise. And I know you've heard the mayor on the show talking about you, and you guys used to get along, and you used to hang out a bit, and now I can't even get you together for a cup of coffee. But here's the thing.
You know, Steve, this is a really important point. I still consider him a friend, but you know, he used to try to reform. He's given up. And after the McDonald video was forced into the public, he collapsed into Madigan's arms completely. It's very tragic. It's tragic for everyone in Chicago and around the state. He's collapsed into his arms, and he's really doing as Madigan's directing him. And well, it's so sad to see. It's very, very frustrating.
Well, you know how I feel about the speaker and how he's got a chokehold on the state. Having said that, the fact that he blocked a budget for 2 years goes to the larger issue of realism here. I believe you've already accomplished a lot of terrific things for this state, and a lot of them that don't get noticed or aren't going to be noticed anytime soon. Yeah. But the legacy of underfunding Chicago schools or not getting school funding done right now is going to get hung on you because you're the governor. Yeah. Isn't it better in the long term with somebody with the stubbornness of Madigan, who doesn't care what people think and doesn't have a phone in his office to even take a call on what people think? Isn't it better to take the best deal you can get now and move on so that you have a fair chance of being reelected to continue the fight?
Well, I have to do what's right for the people of Illinois. And I'll say this, Steve, you're correct. I will compromise on any element. I will compromise. I'll find common ground. And I've said anything in my mandatory veto can be on the table and take away a lot of it. I'm willing to compromise. What I wanted to do with the mandatory veto is show how broken the current system is and how broken SB1 only makes it worse. Steve, we have to do fair things for the suburbs and the suburban kids. There are low-income kids in Aurora and Cicero and Waukegan and Elgin. They deserve to get more funding, too, just like I'd like to get more for Chicago. Those districts, though, don't have the property tax wealth that Chicago has locked away in TIF districts. Chicago has locked up their property tax value in TIF districts so the mayor can have slush funds. It doesn't fund the schools. In fact, this is one of the areas that the Chicago Teachers Union and I agree on. They've been complaining about these TIF funds that take taxpayers' money in Chicago and lock it away for slush funds and don't fund the schools. $19,000 per student in Chicago is locked away and doesn't fund the schools. That's wrong, and I expose that in the mandatory veto. And what's unfair about it especially is in the current funding formula and in SB1, the rest of the state has to subsidize that locked away money and put more money into Chicago because Chicago is locking its own money away.
So that's...
And the second problem, and this is really important too, Speaker Madigan is in Chicago cutting insider deals to reduce the property taxes on downtown office buildings. He's become a millionaire doing that. And he's taken money away from Chicago public schools by his insider building evaluations and tax reductions he's been doing for years. It's a broken system, and the rest of the state subsidizes those shenanigans, and Chicago students get less money because of those insider shenanigans.
So, Governor, that's my question to you. How will this affect me, the average taxpayer? How will property taxes be affected and property control by TIF districts if the override of the veto survives?
Well, it's a great question. So if SB1 becomes the law, If it becomes the law and I'm overridden in the House, your property taxes, if you're in the suburbs or downstate, your property taxes are going to go much higher. If I'm overridden and SB1 becomes law, your income taxes are going to get huge pressure to go up even more than what Speaker Madigan already forced through in June. And your schools will lose money over time because your money is being diverted to the Chicago financial structure and a pension bailout. out. This is wrong. It's fundamentally unfair. And that's why I did the AV. And you can see the results of it online at illinois.gov.
You sort of answered my next question in the midst of it, but Mayor Emanuel's been on the show many times and comes back to the same thing, and it goes to part of what I brought up before, and that is the mayor says, Governor, you're getting 90% of what you asked for. Take yes for an answer. Take the 90%. Anybody in a negotiation would say that's a good deal. What's your response to that?
That 90% of a bill's language is in this case, is only 20% of the financial results. What he's referring to, I think, is that the funding formula was done on a bipartisan basis, and I support it. That was the work of the commission that I recommended. That part of the bill, it's the bulk of the language in the bill, 90% of the language, I think. I support that. The problem is the 10% of the language diverts hundreds of millions of dollars away from the suburbs and downstate to Chicago in a broken, unsustainable system. That's the part I'm taking out, and that's the part that really matters. You know, the devil's in the details so much on these bills, and that's how Madigan has manipulated our state into the financial disaster that we've become by inserting bad details into otherwise what seemed to be good bipartisan bills and having a terrible result.
The House, if they do not override, I know the Senate has a bill that they approved this weekend, which could restart the clock and restart the process again. But what happens to the schools in the meantime if you guys continue to be choked on this in Springfield?
Well, this is what's so tragic. This is what Speaker Madigan wants, to increase his leverage. He should have sent that bad bill to my desk when he passed it May 31st, two and a half months ago. He didn't want that because then we would have a good full discussion. We would have time to work it out. We'd have 2 months of negotiations. He didn't want that because he knows the truth is bad for his bill and the truth is very good for my amendatory veto. So he waited until August. Passed it to me. I flipped it around, and now he's going very slow. He's waited 2 weeks since my AV. He wants the crisis. He wants children's parents scared. He wants teachers upset to increase his leverage in the negotiations.
Are you prepared to lose re-election over this?
I will never give up trying to help the people of Illinois create a better future for our children and our grandchildren. You know, I'm a volunteer. I'm doing this out of love of our state, love of our home here. I will never give up working for the people of Illinois as a volunteer, no matter what. I always will push to do what's right for the long term and be clear about it. But I will always be willing to compromise. I will always be willing to be flexible and find common ground. I tried to do it in the budget negotiations. Madigan would have none of it. He wouldn't negotiate on term limits or fair maps or property tax relief or job-creating regulatory reduction. He wouldn't negotiate at all. I kept trying. He finally broke down in the General Assembly and forced a tax hike. He's doing the same thing to us with our children's education. It's wrong. I'll keep working. I'll keep trying to compromise. Hopefully we'll find common ground.
Give that website link out again for people that you'd like to see.
Illinois.gov/gov. Illinois.gov/gov. You can find all the numbers. They're also verifiable on ISBE, the Illinois State Board of Education's website, although that one's so convoluted it's hard to follow. But either place you can find out the truth of what we're arguing about, and hopefully we can find common ground that's fair for Chicago and fair for all the children throughout the suburbs and around the state.
I know we both have to run here, but final question, is the business of the state of Illinois getting done, or is this taking up all the time?
Boy, we are getting a lot done. We're signing good legislation every day. We're making our government leaner and more effective. We're recruiting companies. In fact, I'm going to Asia in a couple of weeks to recruit more businesses. We've grown about 120,000 jobs since I became governor. I'm working 24/7 to get our state healthy and strong, and we're making progress, and we'll look forward to talking about that with you in the future.
Thank you, Governor. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. Take care.
That's Governor Bruce Rauner. I wanted to talk to him, too, about some of the staff change issues, but it goes to larger questions, which frankly muddy the general issue here. And the general issue is parents around Chicago and all over the state would like to believe the schools are going to open on time, would like to believe they're not going to have to maybe have 2 days off from work or a week off from work because they might or might not have to have daycare for their kids. Teachers would like to know if they need to spend money to set their rooms up that they have to spend out of their own pocket, but maybe they don't spend it yet because maybe it can. This just BS has got to stop, and we do it every year. So every politician that wants to run for governor next year that wants to go, I just want to do what's right for the kids. How about you just do what's right and stop using kids as some sort of ploy to get elected or get votes? And I'm telling you, every one of you that cares a whit about this, vote in the primaries. Do your research. If we can help you by listening to this show to be inspired to do your research, great. Don't take my word for any of it if you don't want to. But find out what matters most to you in your town, in your school district, in your hula hoop of life, and deal with it. Don't let people control your lives who clearly aren't doing it. They're doing it for their own benefit. 735. Big story next. 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
We're closely following the terrible events unfolding in Charlottesville, Virginia. We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides. On many sides. It's been going on for a long time in our country. Not Donald Trump, not Barack Obama. It's been going on for a long, long time.
Just when you think he can't surprise you by being more disappointing than he was the day before, he rises to the occasion. President Trump, Saturday afternoon on Charlottesville. He will be back in Washington later today, and Ryan Nobles can speak to that. Ryan Nobles, our friend from CNN. Good morning, Ryan.
Hey, guys. How are you this morning? Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you as well. And what is the president interrupting vacation for today?
Well, the big thing that's going to happen today is that he's going to have a meeting with Attorney General Jeff Sessions and the new FBI director, Christopher Wray, where they are going to specifically discuss what happened in Charlottesville and what the appropriate response should be from the federal government. This was something that was added to his schedule. In fact, Attorney General Jeff Sessions just announced it this morning as he did a couple of talk shows. And he has another event later this afternoon at 3 o'clock, a bill signing. He had mentioned last week that he was also going to have a major press conference. So far, that major press conference hasn't been added to his public schedule yet. But obviously, when he said that he was going to have a major press conference, that was before everything happened in Virginia. So exactly what his response is going to be, if he's going to try and clean up the things that he said, that fight that you played coming into us, we don't know yet. But the fact that he's having that meeting with Ray and Sessions is an indication that they realized that perhaps their initial response wasn't quite enough.
Every president has a messaging team that tries to make sure the words that come out of his mouth are words that are beneficial to the administration and to the president in particular. But there are times when you would expect the individual would be able, out of a basic humanity, speak from the heart. How is it that the president of the United States wasn't able to step up and speak from the heart and just be, well, make it as personal as possible here? He has Jewish grandchildren. And speak to the scourge of this Nazism that these neo-Nazis were promoting, just as a piece of that.
Well, Steve, I think that that piece of sound that you played leading into me is a perfect example of how he's bumbled this situation, and he's been roundly criticized by not only Democrats but Republicans as well. And the piece you played, if you listen to it and if you watch it, it's even more stark. He's reading something that was scripted. And everything he says up until this in the scripted portion seems to be on message. It seems to be appropriate for the situation that was going on. And it seemed as though he was going to make the right kind of message to the country having to do with what was going on in Virginia. But then he goes off script, and he does this so often. And that part where he says, on all sides, and then he goes into that riff for some reason bringing Barack Obama into it, that's where he got himself into trouble. So when you say he's speaking from the heart, you know, the part that he did unscripted was the part that is seemingly getting him in trouble. And you have to wonder, and this is the question I think a lot of people are raising today, and if he does take questions today, I think it's the question that's going to be asked directly to him. Why is it that when there are examples of Islamic terrorism around the world, he has no problem labeling it as such, which, you know, that's neat. It could be a good or bad thing, depending on your perspective, but that's clearly a tack that he's taken. You know, there's been other examples specifically of cars ramming into human beings where he immediately declared it an act of terrorism. But here in this instance, when the alleged perpetrator may have had white supremacist level motivations, he's afraid to go down that road. And then the other peculiar thing that happened over the weekend was that the White House put out a statement from an unnamed White House official. So this was a statement that was put out by just the White House at large. They were afraid to ascribe it specifically to someone who works in the White House, where they then fully condemned Nazis and the KKK and white supremacists.
I mean, you gotta laugh. You have to laugh. It is so patently ridiculous. If you can't get on the side of condemning Nazis and Klan members while accepting they have a right to protest and accepting that they have free speech, they don't have a right to murder anybody. And the violence that occurred, yeah, that's not right on either side. But the other side didn't kill anybody. So at least step up and say they're wrong and I'm against it. I got to tell you, I'm really stuck on this, Ryan, as a father and now a new grandfather. And I know you as a dad as well, that he takes everything personally. Why not this? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't he be thinking of his own Jewish grandchildren? And the reason I'm harping on this is you may remember the Nazis had a problem with the Jews. So why not step up? More with Ryan Nobles in just a second. Stand by for that. He does fabulous work at CNN. You can follow him all over social media, and we'll come back with Ryan after traffic and some business here on 720 WGN. Mary. Ryan Nobles from CNN is with us. Andrea, say hi.
Morning, Ryan. He brought up President Trump brings up President Obama in his remarks where he was attempting, I think, to condemn the attacks that over the weekend in Charlottesville.
And cover his own butt.
Right, but my question is, don't you think this, I mean, he continuously does this with Hillary Clinton, a former Secretary of State. Now it's on to Obama. Don't you think this sets somewhat of a disrespectful precedent to start harping on previous presidents and either their policies or what they couldn't accomplish, in his view?
It's one of the most mystifying things about Donald Trump. The guy seems to continually have somewhat of an inferiority complex. It's like someone needs to remind him that he is the president of the United States and that he doesn't have to worry about other people that were president of the United States. And we talked about this before, and one of the reasons that he's been so reluctant to allow the Russia investigation to go full board, I think in big part is because of his concern that there's a perception that he didn't win the election fair and square. And I think this tracks back to it. Whenever he mentions Barack Obama, the fact that he's still obsessed and still believes that there should be all these myriad of investigations looking into Hillary Clinton, it demonstrates that lack of confidence in his responsibility and his role as president of the United States. And it doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, he's got all these other things that he's got to worry about. The idea that he feels like he needs to continually compare himself to Obama and Clinton just doesn't make any sense.
The chief advisor to the president and former Breitbart boss, maybe not long for the job, he and the charming Stephen Miller were supposedly the ones crafting the statement of Saturday afternoon. But I got to say, it's hard for me, other than the entertainment value, to take a lot of stock in what the mooch might be saying now after his incredible 10-day run from Stephanopoulos to CNN and other networks this morning to Colbert tonight. So what do we make of what the mooch is saying as he calls out Steve Bannon?
Well, I agree with you that you probably can't take a lot of stock in what Anthony Scaramucci has to say. But I can tell you that our White House team has heard the rumbles within the administration that there is certainly a level of uncomfortability between the new chief of staff, John Kelly, and Steve Bannon, and that with John Kelly's appointment and the fact that he has taken control of the White House, I think that's a pretty clear indication of what's going on, that the odd man out in that scenario is Steve Bannon. And when you have something that took place over the weekend, and you have the alt-right or the white nationalist movement, which Steve Bannon isn't necessarily a card-carrying member of, but he certainly tracks in that direction, that puts a lot of heat on Steve Bannon. Because when you're looking to criticize President Trump for his lack of understanding of this issue, the first piece of evidence that you will use to demonstrate that point of view is Steve Bannon. And there were obviously a lot of people that were very concerned with the level of power and authority that Steve Bannon was going to have in the White House. And so now when you have this kind of companion issue here of John Kelly, and he does not hold the same worldview of Steve Bannon in any way, shape, or form, and the fact that you have this really awful situation that took place. And I might point out the potential for something like this to happen again, because there are rumors and there are potential rallies like this planned all over the country. So this is not this was the beginning, not necessarily the end. That could be what spells the end of Steve Bannon's tenure in the White House. But, you know, Steve, you and I have been talking for a long time about the end of Steve Bannon's reign in the White House, and somehow he's survived, you know, a lot of different situations. So he's not leaving yet, but I think that his role is as tenuous as it's ever been.
Well, you know what happens when the lights turn on? The cockroaches hide, and somehow that'll, you know, elongate your life. North Korea, this is the week where North Korea says they're going to throw 4 rockets over Japan in what would be declared an act of war. And who knows what happens if that, in fact, happens. Some well-documented and respected scientists say this is bluster from North Korea. They don't have the technology to do anything they're claiming to do. But this is a pretty uncomfortable staring contest with the wrong guy in charge. How nervous do we need to be about the week ahead with what really matters here in the big picture, and that's North Korea?
Well, it's pretty incredible that, you know, it's taken this long in our conversation to get to North Korea.
Isn't it, Steve? Exactly.
I mean, a Thursday afternoon, you know, you would have thought that this would have been the dominant story of the weekend, and then Charlottesville changed that in a big way. I mean, this is still unquestionably the biggest foreign policy challenge for the president, and you described it perfectly. This is a staring contest, and exactly what North Korea is capable of, I think there's a lot of confusion about right now, and it gets back to, you know, does Donald Trump have the will to get the Chinese and the Russians involved in a cooperative effort to get Kim Jong-un to step away from these threats? We've seen no evidence that that's the case at this point. But these next few days and over the week, you know, will North Korea make good on their promise? And if they do make good on that promise, if they do throw a couple of rockets in the direction of Guam, you know, how does the American military respond? We don't know the answer to that question yet. But if it's anywhere near the level of rhetoric that Donald Trump has been throwing out, that could lead to a serious international situation.
Ryan Nobles, he never sleeps. Because when he's home, the kids want daddy to play.
Exactly. It's got nothing to do with news that I don't sleep.
Yeah, exactly. But you still look good. When it collapses, it'll be rough. But you're holding up so far. It's Ryan Nobles from CNN on social media, at Ryan Nobles. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys. Have a great week.
We got a lot to do in this 8 o'clock hour, including Mark Carman had a great idea that came out of the Beat yesterday. Basically, in short, it's names you can't trust.
Oh.
Names you can't trust. It'll be a mini text poll for the rest of the show. But if you have a name and you hear that first name and you can't trust him, I'd like to know what it is. In addition to that, Andrea's hanging out with the lottery folks. And I don't know who it is, but I'm going to find him. Somebody is using recycled paper to print on, and I keep throwing out my own notes because I flip it over and I think it's trash.
Oh, no.
We don't need to recycle printer paper.
We are going to investigate.
For the printer. Put the new stuff in.
I would assume it's somebody with an untrustful name.
Oh, look how it all ties together. That's why you're good. This is Chicago. Oh, we got to do a break first. Then we'll come back with the news on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
8:15, Dean. 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 Dean, there he is. I guess that was me.
Whew.
Dean Richards, I want to ask you about your show yesterday. We got a long list of show business stuff, but we need to talk about a couple things here that really matter. One is somebody on the staff is recycling printer paper, so they're printing on the back side of paper that's already been used.
I'm sorry, I hate to be like anti-environment and anti-green, but stop that.
Yeah, stop it completely, because here's what I do. I have thousands of papers scattered out in front of me every morning.
Right.
I'll make notes on the back of paper that I need to have the space to do it. Or I see the paper turned upside down and I absentmindedly throw it away because I think it's trashed. It's not mine anyway.
Right. I agree.
Stop it.
Stop it.
We have plenty of paper.
There's plenty of paper. Or if you're that concerned with the environment, download all the information that you want to put on to, like, to an iPad or something.
Right.
Because then it's easy to organize and keep track. But If I've got stuff on both sides of the paper, I'm not sure what I'm looking at anymore.
No, it's ridiculous. And it needs to stop. These are the big problems I'm having.
People think this is easy doing what we do.
No. No, there's a, you know, this whole nuclear thing with North Korea, sure, it's important. But I'll ask you, is it as important as this?
Mm-mm.
No.
Nope.
No. Item number two, I thought Carmen hit on something yesterday, which is important. We're turning it into a text question here. And this is names you can't trust.
I heard that. I heard them. The Mitch Mitchell controversy.
Yeah, give me an explanation, Carms.
Well, when you're a quarterback, we need a solid foundation. It's Joe Montana. It's not Joey. Mm-hmm. It's not Tommy Brady. It's Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. Mitch, to me, is a guy who's hanging out at the bar.
Mitch is a weasel name.
Right.
Yeah.
Mitchell, you believe in. And the Bears need a quarterback you can believe in. We've been waiting a lifetime for it. He's not sure what to call himself. He's saying nice things to the media, whatever you want to call me. No, your name is Mitchell.
Yeah.
Mitchell Trubisky.
Yeah.
I don't remember if it was Hogue or Jarrett yesterday, though, who was making the point. You mentioned Tom Brady. Then if we go by your logic, then wouldn't Thomas Brady be even more solid than Tom Brady?
Right.
Yeah, but Thomas is annoying. Tom is solid enough. The key here.
Well, clearly
Thomas
your theory is full of crap. No, your theory.
That's so
no, his theory is nonsense. However, having said that, we all have names we can't trust. Names of people, when you hear a name, whatever happened in your past, somehow there's a negative association with that name. I agree with you on the Mitch thing. The Mitch thing is problematic.
Right.
But I would also throw in a Matthew. Matt's okay with me. I got a problem with Matthew. And you would think I'd have a problem with Sam, Randy, or Tom, but certainly those three, all bad.
Yeah.
And Kevin, certainly, good God.
Yeah.
But the good Kevin, Sam, Randy, and Toms outweigh those four Star Wars bar characters.
Steve, how do you feel about Ezekiel?
Ezekiel's a very positive thing.
Zeke is good.
Oh, yeah,
Zeke
yeah
is
that's
strong.
Positive.
What
positive.
About, I mean, there's always Damien. I mean, that.
Yeah, I agree with that. Damien. No, I she's mean, right. People, I agree.
Well, you go right to Satan's well
I know
here.
People are still naming their kid Damien.
I feel the same way. I know someone,
but
a
these
friend
are baby
of a
names.
Yeah,
no, but
tell them your imagine? Cousin's new name that you knew that they just named Andrea.
Oh,
or don't
God.
You want to divulge that?
Wait, what one was it?
The
what
traitor
one?
Name.
Oh, yeah. I feel bad even saying that.
Benedict Ronald?
There was someone who just named their son Benedict.
Mm.
Just Benedict or middle name Arnold?
First name.
Benedict.
It was the Traitor family. Benedict Arnold Traitor. all right, so everybody must have a name. So by the time Dean and I are done, I expect you all to cough up a name that gives you the willies, a name that troubles you. And Texters, 312-981-7200. If we
and
remember,
don't make
we'll
it
give
Dean
out prizes
or,
for
don't
this.
Don't make it Dean or Steve.
Steves are already coming in.
Yeah.
I swear to you, Steves are already coming in from Texters.
Right.
Yeah.
Barry Obama's never the president of the United States. Barack is. Donnie Trump does not get, whatever you think of either of them, Donnie Trump doesn't make it. Donald has a shot. Barack has a shot.
Oh, see, I disagree.
Yeah, your Trump thing. Your essential premise has some weight to it, and then you blow it up because you don't have any background.
Donald, you always think of a duck. You do.
Going forward, you're always going to think of Trump.
I didn't mean to bring Trump into it.
I would leave the duck association if you could. all right, so that's item number two. Secondarily, or third in my listing of really important things before we get to your list. Andrea covered the lottery winner, the local lottery winner.
I did.
And what's his name, Nick?
Yes, Nick Andrikopoulos.
Nick, of course it's
yes,
the Greek
I
guy.
Know, I know. And it was funny because all the reporters were out there. We were waiting on Saturday for him to come out. The winning ticket was sold at Nick's Barbecue.
This is for Channel 9.
In Palos Heights, yeah. We're all waiting and we found out his last name. And they said, well, of course, everyone's saying, oh, maybe you're related. Maybe you should call him.
Well, here's why I bring it up to you and Dean, knowing he's Greek. You guys share everything.
We do.
Do you share Nick's money now? Does Nick have to split all of the cash the barbecue gets for selling the winning ticket?
We don't get to split the money, but we do get the first crack at being a cook at the restaurant that he will most certainly open.
Yes. Dean, how is Uncle Nick? I've been meaning to ask you.
Do you mean my Uncle Nick or
Uncle
Cousin Nick?
Nick? Nick?
This is
Nick.
My Uncle Nick. Nick.
My Theo Nico.
Nick and
hey,
Nick.
Nico. Which is funny because
your soundbite from my Big Fat Greek Wedding.
You guys want to laugh. I went into the restaurant. I met his son, Nicholas, and his grandson, Nico.
Yeah, and I'm sure there was a niece, Nicolette.
And Nicole.
Right, Nicole.
It's true.
Yep. We'll talk about Dean's special yesterday, which was great. Tom Cruise was injured. We'll find out if his hair is okay. Bruno Mars is more than just a great dancer. And Game of Thrones is either being shot in Chicago or there's people with shields and helmets on the street. I don't know what that's about. Stand by for all of that coming up. Before we get to that and more, Dean, let's get to traffic with Mary.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richer, the entertainment editor, Channel 9720.
All right, back to Dean now. Dean, here are some of the texters, aside from all the Steve and Dean texts that are coming in. The text question is names you can't trust. Chad. Chad.
I like Chad.
Yeah, mixed
like
on Chad.
I like Chad, too.
Bob. Listen, you might have had a bad experience with a Bob, but there's a lot of Bobs out there.
I don't think
you can be a negative on a Bob.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Bob or Michael, you pretty much have to take off the list. Those are so common.
So
this
true.
Is interesting from the 815. True. Can't trust a Wayno.
A
Wayno.
Wayno?
As Wayne. Wayno.
Oh.
Hey, Wayno. I actually know a Wayne that we call Wayno. He's a good dude. Former Chicago Cup.
I'm going to just say you can't trust somebody who would say Wayno.
Right.
Andrew or Andy? I have no problems with Andrews and Andys.
That's my exact point. Andrew Luck is a great quarterback. Andy Dalton is a huge disappointment. Mm-hmm. Andrew made it. Andy didn't.
This is interesting. 608, never trust a Bootsy.
Oh, yeah. I could agree with that.
And Dean from the 219, I don't know if this one's for you, Jim Toronto. Why don't they like Elton Jim?
What?
Elton Jim's fine.
Poor Elton.
Let's do the list. Tom Cruise got hurt doing a stunt. Well, he's my age, for crying out loud. Let somebody else do it. And Dean is no longer with us?
He's agreeing. He's thinking about that.
Is Dean being held hostage?
No, I'm right here.
Oh, well, jump in anytime now. Tom Cruise hit his face on a wall. What happened?
Oh, yes.
By the way, who interrupted you, Dan, when I was talking to you?
Annabelle Ball.
Just now?
Yeah, there was somebody that interrupted you. I could tell.
No, nobody did.
Okay.
I was just momentarily distracted.
I got you. All right, so Tom Cruise is jumping.
Were you just talking to me?
Yes, as a matter of fact. Oh. When I say Dean and ask a question, it's generally for
you. Are
we
doing this segment right now? What'd you say about Chance the Rapper? What'd you say? No, so Tom Cruise.
Yes.
I'm somewhat paying attention.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise, he likes doing his own stunts. He likes, bragging, oh, I do my own stunts. I'm such a man. I do my own stunts. So he's working on Mission Impossible 6 right now in London.
Okay.
One of the stunts called for Mr. Cruise to jump from one high-rise building to another. It wasn't a high-rise building. They were just buildings. But
he came up short.
But he came up short and smacked into the side of the building to which he was jumping. Nobody has officially said anything. But
like smashed his knee against the wall,
somebody captured some video of him clutching his knee. It looked like he was in a lot of pain. He's 55 years old. Maybe it's time to let some of the stuntmen do.
This I don't even do my stunts on this show.
Right.
Which mostly involves sitting and talking.
This is way different than jumping on Oprah's couch, jumping mm-hmm. from building to building.
Yeah, it's time for that, Dan. I love Bruno Mars. I think Bruno Mars is great. And a terrific dancer, much like me. He's got the hip, he's got the funk, much like me.
Mm-hmm.
But he also has $1 million to give away.
You definitely have the funk, I will say that.
Mm-hmm. Especially in the studio today, it's about 900 degrees in here.
It was hot in there yesterday, too.
Yeah, it's weird.
Have you watched the video, Cruise? Have you seen it?
Yeah, it's not good.
Oh, my God, this is great.
It's not good.
That's worth it.
Unless you don't like Tom Cruise, then you'll find it amusing. Bruno Mars, $1 million for who?
For the people of Flint, Michigan, the greater Flint,
the Flintonians,
water, the Flintstones,
Stones, as
I like to call them. he was doing a concert in Auburn Hills, Michigan, just outside of Detroit. In the middle of the show, he stops the show and announces that he has directed funds from that show to go to the Community Foundation of Greater Flint to help the people there who have been affected by the elevated levels of lead that is still found to be unsafe in Flint, Michigan. The EPA is still recommending people drink bottled water. But, people complain about, oh, these celebrities and their causes, and why don't they keep their mouths shut? There are more celebrities who donate so much money,
right.
So much that you don't hear about.
Right.
Here's another example. Bruno Mars, $1 million of his own money, next one of you that want to criticize a celebrity, tell me how much you've donated like that.
Well, that's the thing. Just because you have money doesn't mean you have to give it away.
Yeah.
So the fact that they're doing it is a nice thing.
I think so, too.
Celebrate it. Chance the Rapper throwing a free concert.
Also,
where?
Also doing a super nice thing. He was Grand Marshal in the Bud Billiken parade on Saturday, which was a blast. It's one of the most fun parades that we have in Chicago and one of the biggest attended. So he is Grand Marshal. You know, a lot of people are handing out fans and, you know, little trinkets and things, beads, candy, things like that. Chance is handing out tickets to a free concert that he decided to put on at the last minute at the auditorium through a last-minute concert for his fans just to say thank you to his fans for free. And handed out like 30,000 backpacks also along the way for, you know, kids going back to school. That's what the Bud Billiken Parade's about. Lots of other performers joining him on the stage, and former President Obama provided a special video message to the crowd thanking Chance in particular for his charitable works. Speaking of donating $1 million, that's what he did to the Chicago public school system, and thanked Chance for being so involved in his personal commitment to the city of Chicago and charity and so forth. So pretty nice. Again, pretty nice.
Yeah, a good thing. Shonda Rhimes, who has come up with all the knucklehead shows ABC has on Thursday nights and made a gazillion dollars, and rightfully so because they're all big hits, Grey's Anatomy and Scandal.
How to Get Away with Murder.
How to Get Away with Murder. Yep. And I Don't Like the Way My Dog's Looking at Me. I mean, all the shows.
Yeah.
All of them.
Yeah. That was my favorite one. Yeah.
She's leaving ABC?
She has decided to leave ABC. And is joining Netflix. Said that the creative she didn't trash ABC in any way. In fact, she's still got some deals pending with them, and will still provide programming to them. But she said that she likes the creative vibe at Netflix. You know that it's the it's the new frontier. You know, for people to
produce. $20 billion in debt.
Maybe this will help get them out of debt by having her create some shows that are as popular as Grey's Anatomy and some of the others.
That's why I've turned down Netflix. I'm concerned
because
about
they're worried about their debt.
Yeah, really. That's that and the fact they haven't made me an offer. HBO has pre-released Curb. Oh wait, no,
yeah,
they
not
haven't.
Really? Not really.
Oh wait, no, they haven't.
Yeah, the hackers have pre-released Curb. The people that hacked into HBO released some Game of Thrones material last week, and then. Have been releasing, you know, memos and things like that over the weekend, released a couple of episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm that isn't scheduled to be on the air until October. HBO has said that the hackers, you know, want money. They're literally putting this up for ransom and saying they're going to continue to do this until they get, I think it was $1 million, something like that. And HBO says, we're not going to negotiate. You know, we're unmovable on this. We're just going to continue to provide programming as we normally do.
We don't have time to play the tape here, but you can see it on TV. But there was a Game of Thrones star in Chicago.
Yeah, the guy that plays Bran Stark on the show, Isaac Hempstead Wright, very lovely young man, was at the AT&T flagship store on Michigan Avenue. We had a lovely conversation with him. Showing it on TV this morning. We'll have it up at WGNTV.com/Dean's List.
Did you hear about the problem they have with the new Apple Store? I'm not making this up. New Apple Store, which is built to look like a laptop, with the roof being what it is, it's now been under construction since just about 6 months before Steve Jobs was born. Mm-hmm. Birds crap on the roof constantly. So they're having problems with not just pigeons, but somehow birds have apparently been attracted to go full bombardier on the roof of this thing.
On the laptop rooftop.
Yeah, it makes for not quite so attractive a photo op for from above.
Oh, gee. What are you going to How do you change that?
I'm not sure. We're going to need new birds.
Yeah, exactly.
We've got somebody make a call. We need new birds.
I don't think you should rush to judgment on this, because now the top of that laptop looks like all millennials' laptops that have those decals on them.
That's a good point,
that's
Dean.
True. Yeah. Congratulations on your special on Alzheimer's yesterday.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we had it was a powerful show, a really powerful show with the people that we had on the show who are living with Alzheimer's right now, their caretakers, the medical experts that we had on, the advocates. It was frank and sometimes a little bit emotional, but I'm very, very proud of the show, and I thank everybody who
as you should
the
be. Mark Carmen said nice things about you as well.
Well, it was incredible, but I don't know if you read the text line, Dean. I don't know if you're a text reader, but the stuff that was coming in there, so much heartfelt stuff for you. It was incredible. And then I started talking sports.
Yeah, very nice. How do you feel about the name Dean? Because there really isn't any way to nickname Dean at all.
Strong.
I like
Dino.
Dean.
People say Dino
Dean.
A lot.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Dean's fine.
Dean is solid.
Dean's fine. Dean's solid. Dino's solid. Yeah, I think we're fine.
Dino's a little dicey.
How about Deenie Weenie?
How about Deenie Moo?
Okay. Here's what we'll do. We'll go back to this.
Sorry.
We'll go back to the text question. Names you can't trust. I don't care the reason. I just want to know what the name is that you can't trust. Thanks, buddy.
Bye.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
This came from something off the beat where Mark Harmon said it's not Mitch, it's Mitchell. You can't trust a guy named Mitch. Your text poll, your text question of the day, names you can't trust. Don't care why, just names you can't trust. Dominic.
Oh, I don't mind Dominic. You don't like that?
I'm fine with Dominic.
Yeah.
Oh, I have a problem with
Dominic. As opposed to Dom?
Why don't you like Dominic?
I don't know. I've just met some kids that were Dominics that were just trouble.
They were trouble?
Trouble kids, yeah.
There's a guy at Channel 9 who's a Dominic. He's a good guy.
847 says Chuck.
Well, here's the thing, and Jake brought this up too. I like Chuck. I like Charles. Chaz for a guy is...
Mike Jacobson has a big problem with Chaz.
Chaz.
Yeah, I think you have to wear an ascot if you call yourself Chaz.
Chaz.
Because you're kind of being a big ascot if your name is Chaz.
I know a Chaz, and he's from the North Woods, and he's a really nice guy.
There's no one named Chaz in the North Woods.
Northern Wisconsin. He is.
Especially
he
there.
Really is.
Okay, I'd second check and make sure he's not sending bombs in the mail.
Yeah.
847, the name Jolene is trampy. Jolene, Jolene.
Jolene, Jolene.
630, speaking of in the woods, Ted.
Yeah, well, that's just because the Unabomber.
That's
the Unabomber.
Yeah, I've hit some Ted issues.
Overall, Ted's solid, though. Ted gets it done.
Ted's an American name.
But you can't go Theodore.
Theodore's a bit stuffy.
Trouble. Yeah.
How about Roosevelt?
Roosevelt's not a great first name. 630, Natalie. I have no problem with Natalie.
Oh, it's my goddaughter's name. Best name ever.
Natalie's a nice name.
Love Natalie.
Yeah. 224, hard to argue with this one. Vlad.
Yeah.
Vlad, Vladimir, Boris, Natasha.
There you go.
Yeah. 630, this is interesting, the two choices made here. 630 votes, Tim or Cletus. I'm not sure why those two be together. Yeah, I think if your name is Cletus, you're going to get a second look. Somebody threw in Joey. There's a certain age where you can no longer wear a backpack and you can't be called Joey. You become a Joe. And I got to go with Mooch. I think Mooch is rough. And I actually have a friend named Mooch.
How about Anthony versus Tony? Do you guys have a preference? Do you like an Anthony? Do you like a Tony?
I had a good friend named Tony, and Anthony seems fine. I think you know if you're an Anthony or a Tony. You know, I think you and don't let anyone else make you that. You become an Anthony or a Tony.
Yeah, there's a big difference.
Anthony
those
wears
two.
Too much moose.
See, moose. I think moose and probably a lot of Old Spice.
Right? Yeah.
Or maybe Drakkar Noir. All right, so texture line 312-981-7200. Let me shift gears here and come back with some sound that I want you to hear from the weekend. And as a lead into that, Steve, I noticed a tweet you put out this weekend, Steve Grzanich, Newsman 7th Floor.
Hi.
Steve tweeted, "We've seen this before. White House press office tries to put words in the president's mouth. Why not come to the microphones and cameras and say it yourself?" This based on a story off President Trump's Saturday afternoon misstatement, non-statement that was followed up by a spokesperson who anonymously said, "Oh, yeah, he met Nazis and white supremacists."
Right.
What kind of reaction did you get?
Lots of reaction. That has been retweeted about 600,000 times since I tweeted out over the weekend. And it's completely accurate because remember what happened early on in the administration where the press office would come out and say things, then the president would come out a few hours later and say, "No, I didn't say that." It just seems like one of those things where you could just come out to the microphones and cameras. They're right there and say it yourself if you really wanted to, right?
I come back to what I said earlier today. There are certain things that happen when you are the most powerful man and hopefully someday soon woman in the universe where you got to speak from the heart. And I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat or anywhere in between. And this is one of those times where the words don't need to be parsed, where you put an awkward ad lib in the middle because it should have pissed him off. It should have pissed him off to the point where he couldn't wait to get to a microphone to do his job and say the right thing. And I'm sorry, I can't help but look, neo-Nazis and you have Jewish grandchildren. How does that not affect you?
There's no excuse, none.
Somebody replied to the tweet that we were talking about, my tweet earlier, and wrote, you know, of all the things you can condemn, Nazi seems to be the easiest.
It's right up there.
Right.
It's right up there. Yeah, it's easy to get to. People on their cell phones and the light turns green and Nazis. Yeah, I think those are the things we all agree on.
Right.
It's 8:50. I got some moosh sound for you when we come back. Mary.
Scaramouche, scaramouche, will you do the fandango? Thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Galileo. Galileo.
Galileo.
The mooch is back. The mooch made his first appearance yesterday with George Stephanopoulos on This Week. And then he was all over the cable news shows this morning from CNN to everybody else pretty much. Tonight, he'll appear with Stephen Colbert. Of course, this all started with his incredible 10-day run in the White House as the communications director and a reporter. And by the way, a good reporter and a writer named Ryan Lizza did an interview with him where Ryan Lizza says he told him time and time again, this is on the record. You understand this is on the record. This is on the record. You get that we're on the record. And Mooch let it fly, suggesting Steve Bannon get into a position that he couldn't possibly get into. He was never that flexible, and he's certainly not that flexible now. And also referred to former chief of staff, Reince Priebus, in very negative terms with tons of F-bombs. Let's start with that, though. Mooch, on This Week with George Stephanopoulos yesterday, how was that Ryan Lizza interview such a mistake for you?
Okay, so let's talk about that, because that's also been misconstrued. You have to remember what Ryan Lizza did with his article. He wrote the article like I was unhinged and overly emotional and bombastic.
Well, it was your words, though.
Okay, but when you hear the tape, it's a very normal conversation. So the words were mischaracterized in the original article. He's mischaracterizing again.
He's not misquoting you, though.
He's not misquoting me, but he is mischaracterizing, because you know
he's
there's
just putting
a lot
the words out there.
Okay, but George, there's a lot of difference between the lip and cup of substance and style.
I have no idea what that means. I have no idea what that means. Because, like, if I started dropping F-bombs and calling you names, it wouldn't make a difference if I did it in this tone.
No, not at all. The words are still out there.
It's so ridiculous.
It does sound nicer when you use that voice, though.
I suppose.
If you did it in a British accent, maybe.
Well, that would get you. Sure. Scaramucci on This Week with Stephanopoulos on whether or not he deserved to be fired.
Do I think I deserve to be fired? Well, obviously, I wish they would give me a bar of soap and tell me to go wash my mouth out in the bathroom and move on. I don't necessarily think it was going to be very hard for me to stay in the job, given the fact that General Kelly took over. And so I respect General Kelly. And so my feeling about the whole thing is that what happened was sort of meant to happen.
Again, 10 days. If it was meant to happen, why were you there in the first place?
Very poetic, though. It's kind of like, it is what it is.
I don't know what you guys...
What happened was sort of meant to happen.
Yeah. If it's meant to happen, it's meant to happen. Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but I kind of wish he would have stayed in the woods a little longer.
That's Hillary. Hillary's in the woods. Mooch is waiting for the next TV light to come on, and he's going to run into traffic to get to it. Asked if Bannon has to go. Remember, Steve Bannon is the guy that has been mostly in Trump's ear for the 7 months or 8 months he's been in office. Here's Mooch on what the president might be thinking about the Dark Lord Steve Bannon. Mooch?
You've been tough on Steve Bannon. Does he have to go?
Well, I think the president knows what he's going to do with Steve Bannon.
Which is what?
Well, let's leave it up to the president. It's his decision. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I think the president has a very good idea of who the leakers are inside the White House. The president has a very good idea of the people that are undermining his agenda that are serving their own interests.
They include Steve Bannon?
Well, yeah. Like, you know, look, I mean, you know, we're not on a phone call and a tape phone call, and so we're on live television. And so I would prefer to let the president make the decisions that the president needs to make.
Yeah, well, he's going to do that anyway, you know? So man up and say what you're thinking. It's just an opinion question. Oh, Mooch, we hardly knew you.
Was it all staged that, hey, we're going to promote you and then we're going to get rid of you?
I don't think so.
No.
It just happened to work out that way.
Remember Austin Powers and Mini-Me?
Sure.
Trump thought Scaramucci was Mini-Him.
Right.
And was really looking to having a new playmate. So he was disappointed when he got popped. even though Trump doesn't realize he is the president and he could have stopped it. It's a couple minutes before 9. Let's come back. CLTV will join us. Still a lot to do in the 9 o'clock hour on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
I had a dream my life would be so different from this hell I'm living, so different now from what it seemed.
Lovely ladies, waiting for a bite, waiting for the customers who only come at night. Lovely ladies, ready for a call, standing up or lying down or anywhere you go.
I love Master of the House.
Me too.
Brigadoon, Sweeney Todd, Disney, Les Mis, more on that in a second. A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder. This is more than a list of roles I've never played. This is a list of roles I'll never be offered. And roles that John Rapson has played as he joins us in studio. One of the, you just said he's your favorite actor.
He's my favorite Chicago. I love John. I met
John. No, you said your favorite actor
of
all time.
He's my favorite actor of all time. My favorite theater actor. And my favorite actor of all time. But I got to interview John after Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder was in Chicago. And I said, he's so brilliant. And I would say this behind your back too, John. He's so brilliant. He played 9 different characters. And you don't realize until a few minutes and you're going, wait, he looks familiar. Oh, wait. Oh, it's a woman. Oh, wait, it's an older man. So,
and we should say the reason that came up is the cast got the flu.
Exactly.
Exactly. You had to play every role in one night.
And my personality has never recovered.
So no. You can literally play anything.
I don't know about that, but that show certainly gave me the opportunity to attempt. Yeah.
There you go.
How insane is that to learn that?
It was wacky, but it's such a...
But it had to be fun.
Yeah, it was so much fun. I mean, it's such a great piece of theater, and to do like a big, you know, zany comedy like that, and, you know, kind of introduce it to the country, because so many people hadn't seen that show. It was such a blast.
How many women did you play?
2.
Yeah. Who amongst us doesn't like to feel pretty on a weekend?
Exactly. 8 times a week, I got to feel... 16 times a week, I got to feel beautiful. Yeah.
And you were.
Yeah, thank
and
you.
And you were.
Thank you.
This is cool. Tell everybody why you're back in town.
Well, I'm here to do the Broadway in Chicago concert tonight. To represent Les Miserables, which I did for 4.5 years. This production, this really glorious, like, new version of the show that Lawrence Connor and James Powlett have directed.
Coming in October?
Coming in October, October 11th through 29th. Yeah, I originated this, the U.S. version of this 4.5 to 5 years ago as a national tour. Then I did it on Broadway and did it in Toronto as well. And so I'm here to sing a little Inspector Javert and sing some Stars. Yeah.
Javert. Yeah. I said he should have played Javert in the movie.
Well, he's no Russell Crowe, and that's a good thing.
I'm not allowed to comment on that.
Yes, that's fine. Oh, so that's tonight at Pritzker. We were talking about it off the air. I don't remember this, but it rained last year, and the place was still packed.
It packed 11,000 people. We were out there with
get there
umbrellas.
Early.
It is one of the it's probably the best summer concert that you're going to see at Millennium Park. You get a little dabbling of everything. Les Mis, Love Never Dies, Carole King, Motown the Musical, School of Rock, all of the shows that have been here and are coming here, too.
And so many great shows are coming this year, but especially Les Mis. I mean, let's be real. Yeah.
I'm doing most of the music from Death of a Salesman.
You'd be brilliant.
Yeah, I thought so. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for noticing my range.
Yeah.
October 11th through the 29th at the Cadillac Palace Theater. Now, you haven't played Les Mis in how long?
It's been 3 or 4 years since.
Are the songs so stuck in your brain?
They're the earwormiest of earworms, aren't they?
They really are.
But the thing is that's the thing. That's why it keeps coming back. I mean, the score is just so glorious. And I don't think I have ever been a part of anything that audiences, you know, it is such a rich meal when you go and see this show, and people just want to experience it again and again. I've never felt the kind of energy that bounces from the house back onto the stage like I did when I was doing Les Mis. I mean, it is that exciting of a show to perform.
Well, it's funny too when you think about the subject matter of Les Mis, but it's really become a sing along.
In some ways,
especially Master of the House.
Don't get too bogged down in what it's really about. Yeah. Enjoy the story, but the music is unbelievable.
Well, everybody has a character that they like. That's like.
That
identify
with.
Yeah, exactly, that they identify with. You know, no matter what you're going through in your life when you're performing Les Mis, you could sort of channel it into a certain part of the show. But that's the great thing about the show is that it's essentially, you know, it's the themes are so universal. I mean, it's really about, you know, the triumph of the human spirit, and like that's why people keep come to see it again and again.
I think we in Illinois can relate to Les Mis with our budget battle and
surviving.
Absolutely.
Yeah. A true tale of survival.
Yeah, a life about to start when tomorrow comes. Right?
Yeah, survive the Republicans in D.C. and the Democrats in Springfield.
Right, no kidding. I asked John, too. I mean, you've been here. You've been brought to Broadway, and you say that the Chicago audiences are so great. We really just make, you know, a night of it. We appreciate our theater.
Yeah, from an actor's perspective, it's nice to hear that the audiences here, you feel like they get it.
I have always enjoyed performing here so much. I came through with the Les Mis tour twice here, and we opened Gentleman's Guide here, and again, I just feel like audiences here are so excited and so open. There is no attitude of impress me, or if there is, it's quieter. They just want to enjoy an evening at the theater, and they're so smart, and they, you know, it's just like, this is really, I think this is one of the best theater towns in the world, not just the country.
I gotta be honest with you, Broadway's changed.
Yeah.
You know, there's this whole sort of talkback thing now where there's less respect for the fourth wall. Your phone goes off, somebody says something, hey, I'm talking to a friend of mine. Hey!
Right.
Yeah, you're not going to get that in
A
Chicago.
Friend told me they had somebody FaceTiming at their show the other night.
No.
That was that's a new one.
What's the craziest thing that you've ever seen an audience member do
on stage? Oh, geez. Somebody resting, like somebody putting things. This was at Les Mis. Somebody put like their purse and
on
a
stage?
Bunch of stuff on the stage.
No.
I was playing Javert that night, and I thought it was totally in character to kick it off.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
He's an angry cop. What's he going to do? Yeah.
Go flying.
Yeah.
Mints are everywhere.
Yeah, it's easy.
An Altoid shower for the audience. Yeah,
it's easy in stand-up, because in stand-up, you know, you can talk to him directly, but
right.
I love the fact that you just gave it the foot.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, so what's your background? Where'd you grow up?
I'm from Washington, Michigan, which is...
I don't know where that is.
It's like 45 minutes from Detroit. So I'm Michigan boy, Midwest boy.
Okay.
Chicago was sort of a big deal. We would come in. We've
sure.
come into town a lot. Went to school at the University of Michigan and studied musical theater there and moved to New York and have been a very, very lucky man.
First break was what?
Was Les Mis.
Wow.
Was getting this tour back in 2010. And we started the tour at Paper Mill Playhouse, and I did it.
Do you have an agent at that point?
I was lucky to get one right out of college. And we began the tour there, and it was one of those things. I wouldn't have wanted to stop doing it. I mean, it really was the gift that kept on giving, and I got to do a lot of different things in the show. I started off in the ensemble, and I got to play Master of the House, got to play Thénardier, I got to play Javert. The show gave me a lot.
Are you to the point now, too, where they say, we want Rapson to play Javert or whatever role it is, or do you have to still audition?
I didn't. When Les Mis was coming around this time, I sort of thought, you know, like let somebody else have a go. 5 years is, but at the same time, I do miss it, you know? Like, I do miss the like, unbelievable energy that this show creates.
What's a it's, huge cast? Too.
It's a huge cast.
Yeah, big family.
And people always talk about, you know, they say like it's a long show. It's not. It never feels long. It flies because it's just like there are so many stories to follow. And the brilliant thing about this production specifically is it's easy to follow. Like it's like you really like can trace all the character lines and it's just so beautiful. You know, a lot of the set is based around the Victor Hugo, who wrote Les Mis, he was a painter, which not a lot of people know.
Oh.
And a lot of the sets are sort of based around his paintings, which I think makes it even more gorgeous.
Yeah, and it translates incredibly well, which is great. Now, I'm not speaking of a specific production, but by comparison, let's say you had a show where a bunch of people were in cat suits,
yeah.
and they all danced around in cat suits, and you really didn't
know.
This
is Hamilton, right?
Yes, Hamilton.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you really didn't know why the cats were dancing, and at some point your head exploded. It's nothing like that. So
it's nothing like
if
that.
You always wanted to see Les Mis, but you haven't, I'm telling you, dive in.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. This would be a great way to do it in October here, yeah.
And tonight?
And tonight.
Yeah, tonight's going to be great. Yeah. You're going to be singing tonight as well.
Yeah, yeah. Singing about the stars. The stars won't quite be out yet, but you know, I'll pretend like they're there.
And you have your next role coming up.
I'm going into Sweeney Todd in this immersive production that's in New York right now that's been a big success off Broadway. Actually takes place in a pie shop, so you get to eat some of Mrs. Lovett's meat pies before you find out that there's people in them. Yeah.
So very enlightening.
Right. It's a change in the taste, to be sure.
Right, yeah.
Tonight, the Jay Pritzker Pavilion at Millennium Park, 6:15. Again, get there early, take the train, do all the things I wouldn't do myself that I recommend for you.
It's a great show. Get out there and see it.
Get out there. BroadwayInChicago.com for Les Mis coming back in October. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you guys. Thanks.
9:20. More in a moment on 7:20 WGN. We don't hear Mark Carman enough, but if you hear The Beat on the weekends, it's a terrific show. And during the week, a lot of people say, well, what could Carman do with his time during the week? Is he shiftless? Mm-hmm. Is he just a drifter? Goes from town to town?
Like, what's he doing?
But he works for a company called Fansided as well. What does Fansided do?
Fansided, Steve, is got 300-plus websites and, of course, like a homepage, fansided.com. But they got all the Chicago websites, too. Pippin Ain't Easy would be your bull site, Cubby's Crib, Bear Goggles.
So these are fan blogs that are set up in each town?
These are fans who are writing about their team and following the news and putting their opinion pieces out there. And
here's what I like about it.
Yeah.
I think it's brilliant in a lot of ways. Because you're asking people, you're tapping into people's egos. You're asking them to do the work to generate the content you don't have to do, which you're then monetizing and keeping it. I like that. I like that. That's a weasel move.
It's a solid, solid, very well thought out idea
that's what I meant.
That paid off very
well. Yeah, let's go with that. Solid, very well thought out.
I do the videos on there. So if you click on there, Steve, you'll just see my lovely face giving.
It's a cool site. It really is. And it's a great idea. And it taps into fans around the country and around the world, too. Aren't you doing a little international stuff now?
We are. We're working on a pretty cool video, too, that's based on the former Bull, Craig Hodges, and his experience in the league. I don't know if you recall him going to the White House and wearing the dashiki and ended up out of the league and sort of tying it into what's going on today. So that's going to be coming out hopefully at the end of this week. I've been talking to a lot of people.
Doing heavy. Speaking of heavy, how's the cult?
The cult's good. Thank you, Steve. Going well. Maybe
you should explain the cult.
Well, Mark is at a point in his life.
I'm not actually in a cult, but Steve likes to call it that.
Mark's at a point in his life where he is examining a lot of things. His relationships, his work.
His life.
Professional life, his personal life. And part of doing that is being involved with an organization in Wisconsin, and this organization is known as the...
This would be the Wright Foundation for Human Potential. They're not in Wisconsin, they're in Chicago, but they have a graduate university in Wisconsin.
So how's their football team? Pretty good?
They have a fight song, they don't have a team.
Okay.
Wright
would be W-R-I-G-H-T?
Yes, Bob and Judith Wright. Judith, they've both been on the station. Andre and I had them in here.
I was going to say, they were great. They gave me a couple of self-help books, read a couple. They were very good, very enlightening.
Was that before you turned over your personal possessions? No, I'm
Way
kidding, Bob
before.
And Judith.
No, they're great.
I kid because I
Bob
love.
And Judith.
But I like the fact that you are trying to be a better person.
Yeah.
If you're not working on yourself, it's like exercise, Steve. Right? You got to go out. You got to get a little exercise.
That's what I hear.
You got to get involved in. You look great. You're
thanks,
all.
Yeah, I'm feeling good.
You got nice sun. A lot of golf on you. I see
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So what happens the next time you go to? Because it seems like you're going back and forth to Wisconsin. I pictured this as cheese laundering. You know, he's going in. You know, he's moving cheese across state lines.
Again, they have their offices are located here. I think you should go to Foundation's weekend training. It's September 15th to the 17th. It's free.
Tough weekend for me, but I'll look at schedule.
Can
cheese be laundered?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't recommend it.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't
just
recommend
curious.
I actually the last time I went up there, Steve, it was very exciting because there was some flooding going on, which wasn't exciting, but I went a different way and I drove by this brand new McDonald's. It looked so fresh and amazing. So I went in and got the two cheeseburgers, like the best two cheeseburger I've ever had. It was really, really delicious.
How does that tie to the Wright Foundation?
I don't know. I'm
all right, so what
cheese.
Will I learn if I go on the weekend of September? I'm being serious now. What would I learn?
What would you learn? Well, I think you'd get a better idea of where some of your blocks perhaps are.
What things I'm blocking in life?
See, things. Here's a learn for you.
Like obstacles?
Well, let's talk about fear for a second, right? We're all super fearful. We kind of avoid things.
No, I'm not that afraid.
You're not a fear guy.
I'm not that afraid.
Where do you think you need a drop of a?
Well,
I'll
take better care of myself.
Okay.
Yeah. You said you wouldn't jump off
health,
a plane.
Health wise.
Okay. So yeah. Physical shape. Mm-hmm.
Well, not necessarily shape. I mean, just work out more, eat better, and get more sleep. Those three things.
Well, maybe we should start with yearning, Steve. Like, what do you truly yearn for? Like, what's
more sleep?
More sleep.
Yeah.
So you wanna feel more secure, perhaps. You wanna feel a little safer.
No, I just wanna sleep.
Just wanna sleep.
Would it be something tangible, like go to bed earlier, take a sleeping pill, or is it more mental, like prepare yourself, put your phone down?
I don't like
down.
Taking sleeping pills. Well, I've only done it once. In Steve's case,
I might make the argument that he perhaps doesn't need more sleep. He actually needs more connection. Maybe he needs more Abigail.
Always more Abigail.
Right.
The more connection thing concerns me, though, because, as you know, I'm not a big fan of people.
Well,
you are too, most people.
But you're saying there's a deeper meaning to my lack of sleep other than I'm not going to bed early enough.
I think, at least for myself, I've learned a lot of times when I'm tired, it's kind of like I'm avoiding something.
Well, maybe I could learn by your example. So take something from your life, say, that's deeply personal and none of our business, and tell us how the right folks have helped you.
Your love life.
Okay.
Are you in a relationship now?
I am in a relationship now, yes.
With a girl?
With a girl, yes. Her name is Chelsea.
Is she real? I mean, there's no.
I've met her. She's real.
Oh, she is real.
There you
she's
go.
Very Mary. Cute and very nice.
Yes, okay. She did great things for my. She was very sweet on the birthday. I did have a little bit of an issue with Chelsea. If you want to go there, Steve,
you want to go.
Well, so we went to the movies the other night, right?
What'd you see?
We saw Dunkirk. I thought it was awful.
Hilarious.
A lot of people say it was not great.
It didn't do it for me. But she brought. Skinny Pop, which was, we're going full sneak move things into the movie theater.
Brought food to the movie theater?
Yeah, Skinny Pop, Milk Duds, which, by the way, I did request, the Big Cookie. Steve's looking at me like I'm crazy here.
What, did she bring it back?
I'm not looking at you like you're crazy. Here's my problem with people, and I'm sure she's a lovely woman. My problem with people that bring food into the movie theater, here's the rationale. I pay a lot. I'm not going to pay their prices. They have a business. They're running a business.
Right.
And if you choose to eat in their business, I say you got to buy their stuff.
Ah, see, I don't know. You're charging me $13 to come in.
Okay, but then wait. Then why are you hiding it?
It was not hidden. Walk straight up, big bag, nobody
they
said it.
They let you, they yeah, let you
I
bring
mean,
it
there
in.
Was no hiding, I
Were
swear
you
to
concerned
you.
That you'd get busted?
I no. You want to do? You want to take my stuff? Great.
Oh, they let him walk in with it.
But you knew it was wrong on some level. See, this is what the Right Foundation would be telling you. You were blocking.
Well, actually,
you knew
blocking.
It was wrong on some level.
Actually, if you're going to go back there, there is sort of a cost, I would say, to being sneaky, and so that chips away at your integrity. Now, whether it's a Starbust into the movie theater or whatever, however you want, like how do you want to stand?
There's no argument with how much stuff costs at a movie. It's ridiculous how expensive it is. The margins are insane.
I bought a Diet
but
Coke.
It's their business.
$7.
Yeah.
$7 for a Diet Coke.
Yeah,
Steve.
I get it.
I don't mind if you bring a bottle of water in. That's fine with me. Mm. I just don't like bringing alcoholic beverages and cans.
If you
of pop.
Own the theater, would you mind?
Heck yeah.
Yeah, it's my
well, hold
my
on.
Money.
Like back in the day, going to like a Cubs game, I'd go with the family. Papa Fred would make corned beef sandwiches, and now we're gonna pay. We're not paying $2 for a hot dog. What are you nuts?
Was it okay with you then?
I was embarrassed then. I wanted to be.
You were embarrassed. This is all part of what we're trying to get to at the Right Foundation.
You were blocking then, and you're not blocking now.
Tremendous job of making it, bringing it full circle here.
See,
yes.
Here's the thing. We got to get to the news. But here's the thing. I have no question that the people at the Right Foundation are making you a better person. I just think they need to work faster.
Oh. Okay.
We'll come back with a big story next on 720 WGN. Been a while since we heard this, right? It's the love theme from Paul Conrad on Channel 9. Let's go live to Paul now. I said, hoping Paul is standing by.
I'm here.
Hey!
Hey!
How are you, buddy?
I'm great. How are you?
I can't figure out. There's something different about you as I look at you on CLTV.
I've been letting my eyebrows grow out a little bit
put
more.
Put my finger on it.
Oh, he looks younger.
Yeah. More virile.
Sexier.
What caused you to shave the beard?
Well,
if you're watching on CLTV now, you can see
the
closely shorn Paul Conrad.
I was just trying to trim it. And
made a mistake.
I'm not good at trimming. I just have to, once I, you know, people have been complaining that I look like either a goat or a terrorist.
I thought David Letterman's more dangerous brother.
Amish, yeah. David Kaczynski. It wasn't, you know, because I don't like to maintain things.
Right.
I like to get things going, but then I like to ignore it after that. And then I thought, well, I'm going to come back to work, and I'm going to try to make it look more respectable, and it didn't work.
Is today your first day without the beard?
It is.
So how long did it take to shave it?
You know, 5 minutes or so.
Did you have a crew in?
Yeah, I brought in
The guys doing the lawn?
Yeah, the whole salon shut down so that I could come in get it cleaned up. But it's beautiful.
And I understand that Jeff Hoover will be gluing your facial hair to his face to try to get more camera time.
Yes.
Yes, that's what I'm hearing at least.
Shh, don't give him ideas. Stop it.
How have you been, Steve?
I've missed you, man.
I've missed you as
well. How's your summer?
Summer's been great. I love summer.
I do, too.
Because I'm on so much vacation.
Like, well, that's one of the reasons you haven't been on the show lately. It's not like Paul and I are fighting. It's just he's never available.
No. I'm here a week, then I'm on vacation a week. Then I'm here a week, then I'm on vacation a week.
Now
Skilling has to go to Paul to get his vacation time.
That seems
that's why it's turning out now.
Right. Your mail-order bride spends a lot of time in San Diego, I know.
Yeah, I know.
We like to say San Diego.
Right.
Everything going okay there?
Well, you know, it's going pretty well. Ever since, I've said this many times here, and this is for all of you men and women out there who are getting mail-order brides or husbands, you got to make the bulk of the agreements done before they learn the English language.
Right, that's an issue.
Because once they start figuring out the English, the wheels start coming off, and it gets far more complicated to have a successful relationship. Now, my wife and I are the exception, maybe, you know. But
what you're saying, and Mark Carmen, pay attention to this, is you're in a relationship.
Yeah, Mark.
Two words, less nookie.
Oh,
less
Steve.
Nookie. Yes, less nookie.
No.
Yeah.
Well, once she found out that I wasn't the king of the United States, it got more complicated.
Now, I will say this. With the beard gone, it's like a whole new man.
Right, yeah. That's like what changed up also, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's going to bring some fire and excitement back to the relationship as soon as I'm done with these kids' baseball games.
What do the kids think of you without a beard? Have they seen it yet?
Yeah, I think they have seen it, and
they don't care.
They don't care, much like I don't care, and frankly, much like my wife doesn't care.
I got to tell you, Paul, I like it.
You like it?
I like it.
Well, I think you look great. I do.
I feel great, and that's half of life's success, is to feel good about yourself or feel about yourself.
Yeah, that's a crock.
Or something.
Now, I don't know if you have a monitor there from where you're sitting at CLTV.
Yeah,
but as you know, I have the goatee.
Yeah. And it looks really good on you.
Well, see, that's my question, because it's very white.
Right.
You know, as is my hair for someone of my young age.
Right, I know.
At 56, I always like it when someone goes, so, Social Security?
Yeah.
I'm not quite there yet, but it's very white. However, I do find it creates a distraction to my very bald head.
Right.
So I refer to it not as a goatee, but as the distraction.
That is, that's the key.
But I've thought about shaving it, is my point.
No, leave it. I like it quite a bit. And people need to be a little
bit more sensitive.
It does distract
from the second chin as well.
Towards men and calling them older. So I was on the street with my 12-year-old daughter.
Right.
This is a few months back. And this man looks at me, and I'm holding my 12-year-old daughter's hand because we get along with each other.
Yeah.
This guy looks at me and says, "You'll never forget this day. What a special day, and she'll never forget it either, her and her grandfather shopping."
No.
I'm like, what are you talking about? My daughter's giggling and squeezing my hand.
Oh,
give
my
me
God.
A break, man. I'm not that old. I'm old, but I'm...
I can match you. You ready?
Yeah.
My mom, and, you know, she can't ground me at this point.
Right. This is your fake mom.
She's not fake. All right. She really exists. I know Paul, by the way, thinks I hired this woman to play my mom as an actress.
To make a very dramatic story.
Right. Okay. My, still funny. My mom is 77. She looks much younger.
She does look younger.
Much younger. However, there was a time this summer when I took her out to lunch, and the waiter thought we were married.
Oh, that's sweet.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Boy.
Yeah, ouch for both of you, probably, huh?
Yeah, she was disturbed because she said, how old do you think I look?
Right, or
yeah,
you think I'd settle for this?
Oh, right? Man.
Right.
So she was insulted.
Right, of course. Absolutely.
And you didn't feel good about it.
Let's talk about some of the changes going on at Channel 9.
All right, yeah, got a lot of changes.
Got a lot of changes.
Yes.
I can't help but notice the delightfully attractive Erin McElroy is no longer on the morning show. What happened there?
She's on the afternoon shows now.
What happened there?
Well,
because I'm told you got tired of her.
Yeah, that's probably the last thing that is the reality of it. So, you know, she's got these newborn, not newborns, but she's got twin little girls, right, that are a year old.
Yeah, plus she has two kids from her first marriage, so she got like 48 kids.
Four kids, yeah. And this whole shift of waking up in the middle of the night will kill you. And when you're trying to raise young kids, it gets complicated. And her husband's here also. So I think for them, strategically, it made more sense for her to do, and she's always wanted to get back to doing more reporting and feature reporting. So
well,
she's doing that now in the afternoon.
We love Erin, even though she never calls us.
Right, I love her, too. I love both she and her husband on Live.
And she's married to Al Roker. Do I have that right?
Al, that is exactly
Demetrius.
Right. Yeah.
What?
Demetrius.
Demetrius Al, Roker?
No,
Demetrius
Ivory.
Roker. That's right.
She's Erin Ivory now.
Oh, I was confused.
Yes.
All right.
Now, I can't help but notice the also delightfully attractive Lourdes Duarte.
Yes.
Is also no longer on the show, and I'm told
yes.
That's because you got tired of her.
That would not be correct either.
Oh, that's not right either.
No. I think she is another one who was like, this waking up in the middle of the night stuff is for the birds. And I think
we know it wasn't to work with what's-his-name as a co-anchor, because who'd want to do that?
Right. You're right about that. But anyhow, I think we expanded the afternoon show by an hour or a half an hour. I never
watched. The 4 o'clock news now starts at 1:15.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we had to maneuver her into that spot.
There are 6 minutes of the entire broadcast day that is not news coverage.
That's
now.
Right. Yeah. And then
that's why at 10 o'clock, like if you're up that late, because it's crazy to be up that late. But if you're up that late, Mark Sapelsa opens at 10 o'clock news most nights by crying.
Yeah.
Because he's just too tired.
He's grieving.
Yeah.
And then we hired Lauren Jiggetts.
Oh, she's great. We love her.
She is great. She's on from 4 in the morning till 6 in the morning.
You know what she loves if you go up to her and ask her if she's getting Jiggetts with it?
Oh,
yes.
She loves
that.
I'll try that tomorrow.
Yes.
That's a good one.
That. Yeah, she's
Are
never
you
heard it before.
Jiggetts with it.
Yeah, she loves that.
That's creative.
Strong.
All right, I'll do that one with her tomorrow morning.
All right, are there any other changes coming up that we don't want to jar the WGN Channel 9? And by the way, number one, and it's not close.
No.
Today's show, GMA, they'd kill to have the ratings
right.
at
yeah.
the WGN
it's a
morning
surprise. It doesn't make any sense, but that's the way it
no.
is.
Makes nothing but sense. But are there any more changes coming? Because I hear Larry's stealing from the company.
There is some concern that Larry is stealing from the company.
Okay.
I've heard that he wants to get a new piece. And when I mean piece, you
know
what
you're talking
mean.
About.
Yeah. He wants a bigger one or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
I think we both know what we're talking about.
Secretly.
Boy.
It's been taking, skimming a little bit.
All right, last question.
All right.
How long before Jeff Hoover's back on TV? Is it inside of 5 minutes?
He's on vacation this week.
Oh.
So I think.
So we're just running Hoover clips?
Yeah, I think you got a week.
Can I tell Paul before he goes?
Yeah.
Because I know he has to go. Paul, when I'm out and about on the weekends covering story for you guys, you are all, Paul, and you know this, Steve, Paul is always the fourth most asked about person.
Right.
Yeah.
When people
right.
say, how's Paul Conrad? What's he really like?
Right. There's Robin and Larry.
Robin and
there's
Larry.
Magdalena, the cleaning
yes.
lady.
Marcus LeShock.
Marcus LeShock. Yeah. Yes. Jackie Bang.
Yes. Jackie Bang, yes.
yes.
Taman.
Right.
And then you.
And then I.
Jerry Taft.
I meant 14th.
Well, I bring it here.
Congratulations on your face.
All right. Thank you
All
so
right,
much.
We'll talk to you later.
Hey, thanks for the call.
You bet.
Love you guys.
Bye, Paul. Drive,
look both ways.
All right. Peace All right. out.
People do ask about him.
Of course they do.
Always.
Which is
sometimes
great.
Sometimes third. Sometimes
it's great. It's nothing but great.
Yeah, always.
We're coming back with Bill and Wendy. Is Wendy back today? I think she is. Bill and Wendy show coming up on 720 WGN. John Oliver from last week tonight on the Trump misstatements, non-statements, and nonsense of how he handled Saturday. Listen.
Even after a few hours to think about it, the best he could do was squeeze in this response before a bill signing.
We condemn in the strongest possible terms
this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides. On many sides.
Wait, on many sides? This was a white nationalist rally. You have to call that out by name. There honestly aren't many instances in modern American politics where you can honestly think that guy really should have mentioned the Nazis. But this is emphatically one of them. It's like a reverse Godwin's law. If you fail to mention Nazism, you lose the argument. And having made a wild false equivalence between Nazis and people who oppose Nazis, Trump moved on to his favorite subject, himself.
It's been going on for a long time in our country. Not Donald Trump, not Barack Obama. This has been going on for a long, long time.
It seems Trump's first response to anything bad happening is always to immediately absolve himself of any personal responsibility. He's the kind of guy who starts eulogies at funerals saying, "Great guy, I didn't kill him, but he's a great guy and he's dead and I didn't do it." I've got to say, David Duke and the Nazis really seem to like Donald Trump, which is weird because Nazis are a lot like cats. If they like you, it's probably because you're feeding them.
Also, back with Bill and Wendy next.